www.sharkfin.com.
Local restaurants, shops, salons, and more with savings of 50 to 90% every time. Live more, spend less. Download the mobile app now.
Yeah, that's a real sweet deal.
SweetJack.com.
Hey, Dave, be extra nice to Jim. He's had a really bad week, so he's super stressed.
Okay.
Hey, guys, beautiful day for golf. I'm up.
I guess your back's feeling better.
Fantastic.
You look pretty relaxed to me.
I know. Jim, heard you lost a big account at work.
Well,
I'm pretty sure that's a big part of this story. Jim, you seem too relaxed. Are you on anti-anxiety medication or what?
Every night, in my backyard, in your backyard, in my new hot spring spa. It's a wonderful muscle muscle, and it's a great way to relax and let stress just melt away.
Yeah, hot spring spa would help me.
I've seen your scorecard. You can use all the help you can get.
Stress reliever.
All that's been right.
There's just one thing I need to do, and I'll stay away from here.
Welcome to Afternoons with Tracy and Friends, the local talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at tracyandfriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Good afternoon. Here on WSOM AM 600. Hope you're having a good day today. It is the 15th. I cannot believe the day time has just moved by so fast. It's, you know, it's know-it-all Mark Thursday.
How you doing, Tracy?
I'm good.
I'm looking at you. Now, I got to look at you. Now, I haven't seen you since you got back from your trip.
I look the same, don't I?
I don't know. I see a little liberalism kind of popping up. You're up there with the man of the loons. You know, it's contagious. You can't be around.
No, that's not true. No. I didn't drink any water while I was there. You didn't see my Facebook page because everybody, you know, I posted some photos.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. They look wonderful.
And I was having a great time, and everybody thought I was going to come back and be a little left-leaning.
Yeah.
I did not drink any of the water.
Oh, that'll do it. That's good.
And you have missed my water conversation.
Yeah, I didn't hear the water conversation.
I went to Walgreens.
Okay.
To buy a case of water.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to pay a lot of money for just a bottle when I can buy a case for $2.99 at Walgreens.
Sure.
That just makes sense to me.
Makes no sense. That's right.
So I go to...
As I drink my bottle of water.
Because only in America do we go out and buy water and have water free out of the spigot. But nevertheless. And so I go to Walgreens, and I buy a case of water for $2.99.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy anything else. I get to the checkout. The young man, he tells me I owe $4.80.
Can you read the sign in front of the stacks of bottles?
It says $2.99.
Yeah.
He told me there was a CSV charge.
A what charge?
Lake Loon, Looney Bin, Wacky Doodle, Global Warming Plastic Bottle Charge.
Get out.
So I asked the guy, I said, well, how do I get my money back? Well, he doesn't speak English. I'm at Walgreens. The only thing he can tell me is how much I owe and where to find water.
Yeah.
But he can't tell me, he can't explain to me about this extra charge.
Okay. But he knows that it's there.
And it's supposed to be there because it goes on all plastic bottles.
Yeah.
But he can't tell me where to go get my money back. So then the security guard comes up. He helps me out.
Yeah.
He explains to me that you don't get your money back.
Hey, they're lucky. You're lucky to let you out of the state to come back here to Ohio.
No. I was coming home.
Yeah.
So I paid $4.80 on a $2.99 case of water. Then there's 9.5% tax.
Yeah.
Nine. That's a tithe.
Yes.
I just thought I'd.
So you ended up paying what? What was your total?
$4.90 on $2.99.
Okay. And that's where this country is headed.
No.
We have to stop it.
Yes.
That's the mission.
That's crazy.
It's just, yeah, if you're looking for, I've learned a long time ago you can't argue logically with illogical people, and I think there must be something genetic out there in California that they come up with this stuff.
No, people are they're undereducated. I had this conversation with some friends of mine out there, which was, you know, I tried to keep my mouth shut. There are a couple places in the country that I go to, and I just try to smile and shut up and just talk about, you know, anything but politics. But since I have this great radio show and I have this great audience,
Did you listen to it while you were out there?
Absolutely not.
Oh. Ah, jeez.
No.
You might want to see if it sounds any different.
No.
You know, going across the time zones.
No. I heard Blog Talk streaming. There is a consistency there that is absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm smarter than that.
Okay.
Mm-mm. because it'll get you sucked in,
yeah.
And you don't want to do that. And I had it was really great. And today is open mic, so we want to hear from you today. The number is 347-945-5229. And so Mark and I are here, and we know it all, so whatever you need to know, we'll let you know.
Did you see that story in the news about I think it's down in Florida where they're talking about the jury. If you don't speak English, they still have they need to be allowed to serve on a jury, notwithstanding that they don't speak English.
Oh, Mark, wait a minute. I didn't get
heard that.
No,
you heard it.
No,
yeah.
No. But I had a hard time with the man in Walgreens.
Well, imagine if you're on trial for murder. You've got a jury of 12, and six of them don't speak English. How do they come to these conclusions? My question is, where do we learn to think like that? And I want to talk a little bit about things. You know, I haven't seen you for a while, and there's been a lot of news going by on my tablet, and that being
Mark,
one of them.
You can't.
Some wacko judge. That was their ruling. They appealed something because the juror couldn't get on. They couldn't speak English, and they said, "You don't lose." It was phrased. Let me see if I can remember how they phrased it. Because you don't speak English doesn't mean you relinquish your right to serve on a jury. I didn't know there was a right to serve on a jury. I don't see that in the Constitution anywhere. When you're looking at trials, the right should belong to the defendant, not to the juror. The juror is there to serve. That's not a, you know, it's not a picnic. It's not a party.
But, Mark, there's a problem here. I thought English was the language of America.
Apparently not. I think this was in Florida. I think it was in Florida.
But you can't be a peer.
It was the Court of Appeals that decided this.
But if you can't understand, you cannot, if you don't, okay, I can understand if you don't speak English.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to understand English, right?
Well, I don't know, unless what they want is like they have at the UN where you put on the little headphones and the translator comes in and they do it that way. It's the most absurd thing I've read in a long time.
No, you can't do it that way.
We live in a politically correct society.
That's not politically correct. But since you brought that up, and I'm going to bring Matt into the conversation. Hey, Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, Tracy. How are you guys doing?
Have you heard about that?
I was in the middle of something there. I wasn't paying attention. Sorry.
But you people.
What did I hear about? What are you asking?
Well, they're going to make it to where people that don't speak English can serve on jurors.
It wasn't Florida. It was New Mexico, the New Mexico Supreme Court.
Well, like you've said about so many other subjects in the country, it makes perfect sense to me now. If you would have asked me 20 years ago, it would have been like, that's crazy. But honestly, I mean, right now you're talking about you opened up with California having high taxes. Is that really surprising? Nothing is surprising anymore.
No. Mine was not the tax. That was just the CSV charge or whatever it's called.
Whatever it is. It's an extra charge you have to pay to get a product. It's the same thing. Between that and what you're talking about with this, you don't have to learn English. Pretty soon you're not even going to have to live in the country and be able to come and serve on a jury. So, honestly.
But I thought it was supposed to be a place of your peers.
Well, this is a one-world government. This is a one-world government now, so your peers is actually the entire planet Earth, according to some people and I hate to say the word, in power, but the people in power.
But, I mean, come on now. Let's do some sense here, because sense is not common anymore. You just don't do that. I mean, as I said, I try to keep my mouth shut. And we were talking about children and education, and they're trying to blame the reason why our children are not educated is because Bush tore it up in 8 years. I said, well, no child left behind had nothing to do with it. Well, he put mandatory testing in it. I said, well, that's not going to stop you from learning and nor from teaching. I mean, people were graduating from school and they couldn't read and there was no measurement. The problem is we still allowed them to not be able to graduate and they still can't read. And if you know a child can't read by the third grade, tell me why you don't do something about it right then and there.
It doesn't work that way.
I don't understand that.
Well, if you can figure it out, I mean, you look at the broad base of things that are coming out of our courts and out of our legislatures and out of Washington, common sense has gone down the tubes. Political correctness is going to destroy this country. It is the single biggest problem this nation faces right now, because it is leading to absurd conclusions of things that are so far off the charts the country can't, it will cease to exist, because you can't function the way these people want it to function. It's a physical impossibility.
692, your mic is on.
The thing that I see when I hear this story about New, when you said a jury of your peers, okay, well, what percentage of the population in New Mexico is Spanish-speaking? So maybe the majority of people there are being judged on a jury of their peers because they do speak Spanish. The thing that it seems to me is this isn't like happening in Minnesota or North Dakota or Montana. This is happening on a border state where they have a high incidence of Spanish-speaking citizens, okay? So to me, it constantly seems like America is changing, and the people who are against this don't want it to change. Regardless if it's right, wrong, or bad, good, it's, wait a minute, I don't speak Spanish, so this can't, this is a bad thing. And
no,
to me,
not,
it seems like
no,
a
no,
natural,
no.
It's natural.
That's
they
not,
all speak Spanish in Mexico.
I want to back the boat up on this, okay? And I really get tired of this. You don't want to be like Canada, where you've got two languages developing. You don't.
Why
want
not?
That. Does that? Because,
why?
You know what? Because it almost tore the country apart about 20 years ago.
But
it,
did
it? We speak English. Language is the common entity that brings a culture together. If my parents came over here from, my grandparents came over from Italy, none of them could read English, none of them could speak English, none of them could write English. They learned. Nobody was here to do anything for them but them. Now, if these folks want to come across the border, they're welcome to. You'll learn to speak the language.
But let me ask you this. See, I can't take it from that point of view, but I will say that. Let me ask you this. If the judge does not speak Spanish, and how does the juror who speaks only Spanish understand what the jury instructions are and or the testimony unless the whole trial is in Spanish?
You know, that's where this is going too, because now it's not going to be people conforming to the you know, what this country expects. It's going to be the rest of the country conforming to the people coming in.
It's New Mexico. It's one state. This is states' rights. This isn't
it's,
a national
it's
law.
It's a state in the United States.
What you don't quite understand is the precedent setting of a law. This sets a precedent that's unbelievable. You cannot be a juror if you can't understand the language. That's ridiculous.
That's the issue. How can you disseminate facts if you don't understand what people are saying?
And what happens with the court report? Who has to take everything down? Now, you have to. You're going to have two court reporters there, one doing it in English and one doing it in Spanish. Let me tell you something. You want the balkanization of America, that's where you head. You can't have a jurisprudence system, and I'm not being flippant about that. Language is really important, and you know, I don't speak Spanish. I speak some Russian and I speak some French. I learned in each one of those languages, you can see the culture of the country within the language. And some of the stuff, particularly in French, you know, some of the ideas that are expressed in French, you translate them into English, they're absurd. You keep them in French, they make absolute perfect sense. The same thing is going to happen here in our courts. You can't have one system of justice based on Spanish cultural perceptions or Mexican cultural perceptions and another set of justice based on American cultural perceptions. One language, one justice system. I don't know anywhere it says that serving on a jury is a right. Since when is serving on a jury a right?
It's a mandate. It's a law, but it's not a right.
I'm a lawyer, believe me. I get phone calls every day from people saying, I get a notice in the mail. How do I get out of jury duty?
But that's you're applying this to the entire nation. When we're looking at New Mexico, where these people, obviously it's a larger issue in New Mexico. I think that when you say, well, how does it translate from English to Spanish? These people speak Spanish, so to them, the people on trial are Spanish.
No, he's wrong.
You're right. You're right. I agree. But the problem is everyone in the courtroom does not speak Spanish. So if you have a trial, even if the defendant is Spanish, and that's all the only language that they know.
There you go.
The juror.
That's the key.
Okay, now listen to what I'm saying. The juror, if he does not understand English, how can he actually help him out if everyone in the room is speaking English?
And you look at the defendant. Let's say it's an English-speaking defendant who doesn't speak Spanish. There are certain words, nuances, particularly when you're trying to figure out who's telling the truth and who's lying. You look at things, and that comes forth in the language. If your Spanish translation doesn't cut it, if you want to know how it should work, go over to France, go over to Europe. You know, there's lots of people who speak lots of different languages over there, and for the most part, they're bilingual. But I'll tell you, if you go into France, if you go into Britain, and I'm going to guess if you go into Germany, you're going to speak the language of that country, period, end of discussion, because they know of the cultural seep that comes out and the danger of if you want to kind of protect your national identity and culture, of letting those languages seep in. Except, you know, English is kind of interesting because English is one of the two or three world languages that's used. But it's a real problem. You can't do it that way.
I mean, it's just hold on, South Carolina, you wanted to say something. Hold on, go ahead, South Carolina.
I mean, if you've got a language, say for instance, and Mark said it, you have little subtleties in language, particularly in Spanish. One, if you say it one way, it's feminine. You say it another way, it's masculine. And sometimes you have words in certain languages that mean one thing, that in another language it means something totally different. Okay? There's got to be a commonality in this thing. If you don't, it'll be total chaos. You'll have someone up on the stand, and they will. You've got a jury that doesn't understand, and somebody innocent is going to wind up going to jail.
The United Nations meetings.
The United Nations
is not a court.
But wait, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, how do they solve the problem of 100 different languages being spoken when one person is speaking in front of the
there
UN?
Every language has a translator. You see the little headsets that they put on?
Yeah.
There's someone speaking in their ear translating what's being said into their native language.
So it's an easily solvable problem.
No, because it's not a court of law. It's a logistical nightmare. If you've got someone that speaks Tagalog, okay, if you've got another person that's speaking Spanish, you've got another person that's speaking German, what state or what municipality can afford to hire three different translators?
Wait a minute. We're talking Spanish and English here, are we not? Or what are we talking?
If you open up to one, you've got to open it to all, because remember, Spanish is not a because if you look down in the Columbus area, they have a high Somalian population. So now the question is, if they speak only Somalian, does that mean that they can now sit on a jury? Because you couldn't discriminate against
Spanish. Are so nifty. This is about an issue in New Mexico that you guys want to take and say, well, we're going to have to get Tamale interpreters in New Mexico now.
No, what I'm saying is it sets a precedent.
In one of the local high schools here, there's 20 different languages, if not more, spoken within a high school of about 1,500 students. Now, I don't know how are you going to handle that? How are you going to, if you do it for Spanish, you have to do it for German, you got to do it for Italian, you got to do it for Arabic, you got to do it for Hebrew. If they come over here and don't speak English, you don't have an inherent right to sit on a jury. It's an obligation. It's not a right. And when you have defendant, this particular case was a defendant who had his conviction over, I believe his conviction was overturned or at least modified, because the judge said, you have to speak English. Well, okay, I don't know. I'll tell you something, sir. If you are on trial for your life or on trial for a large amount of incarceration for robbing somebody or hurting somebody or something, you're going to want the jury to understand what you say, not through a translator. How do you know?
Okay, and what if you only speak Spanish? What if you only speak Spanish and you're on a jury with they only speak English? Wouldn't you feel the same way?
Well, the court's going to provide a translator if you're the defendant. We're talking about the juror that has to make the decision, sir.
Well, I think the key argument here is, should we make English our national language? And if we did that, it would eliminate this problem. But I think that is what you're getting at, is English needs to be made our national language throughout the courts, throughout the states, everywhere. And then
I thought it was.
It is. It is.
In law?
Yeah, a number of states have laws like that. They want to try to overturn them.
Yeah, I mean, because they want
it's not a national law. That English only is our national language.
Well,
it's not
you're going to need a constitutional amendment.
But
we're getting very close to having a constitutional convention that's coming.
Because if you really think about it, if you realize how much money we spend on making sure that everything that we have has multiple languages.
Yes, and that was the point I was trying to get to, is he's arguing that this is a border state and it should be allowed to have that concession. But listen, I live in Ohio, okay, and 20 years ago they were having these talks about changing these supermarkets or the airports to make sure, or the phone calls to make sure that there was always an option for Spanish-speaking things. So this is something that will not just stay in New Mexico. Every state, it'll go into Nevada, into Colorado. It'll spread, and it'll be a major problem. This is an English-speaking country. You keep it English-speaking, period.
Well, good luck with that when in 15 years when white English are the minority and Spanish-speaking Hispanics are the majority of the voting.
Let me ask you this. If you are a United States citizen, tell me that why is it that when you go, we want to make our world, like our country, like everywhere else, and we don't want to have it to be unique to anything else, but if English is going to be the language, then we need to make it English. Now, I still think that we ought to teach our children multiple languages. Don't get me wrong, because we're in a global world. But there should be a uniformity so that everyone understands what's going on inside of life.
If you speak English, you have an advantage over the non-English speaking immigrants. Period. If you come to this country and you don't want to teach your kids English, they're going to be at a disadvantage throughout their entire life in this country, and that's a fact, whether it's the law or
not. Sorry, my sister just adopted a little girl, 7 years old, from Bulgaria. She didn't know a lick of English. I talked to her after 2 months of being here. No teaching. Nobody's taught her the language other than what she's picked up, and she is so far ahead, sir, it's ridiculous. She will know the language point for point in 2 years.
She knows English, you're saying?
She's learning English and Spanish.
She knew Bulgarian. She was Bulgarian. She knew
Bulgarian. But she knows she's learning English. Your point is she's learning English and how to speak it, correct?
Right.
Right, that's my point. We agree. If you learn English, you will get farther in America than if you only stick to Spanish.
Exactly.
Right. So
you have to realize people are not reading. You know that, right?
If you want to force your kids, if you don't want to teach your kids English, then you're putting them at a disadvantage in this country.
So why would I change the jury pool to have one person on there because they speak Spanish and they don't speak English? Why would I want that person in my jury?
Here's the thing. I get tired, and I mean this, and I'm so angry about it, because I came in here a little charged up today. I'm tired of worrying about everybody else's rights but mine. I've had my rights shoved from pillar to post.
What rights?
Hey, I don't have any.
You don't have any.
I don't have any rights.
You have rights.
All right.
Well, where? When? Everybody else has got them. They come after mine. So I'm speaking up for my rights now.
What right?
I want the right that if I'm in a courtroom as an attorney, that I don't have to deal with a non-English-speaking jury. I want my right. I'm a defendant in a courtroom. I want the jury to understand what it is I'm saying, what my witnesses
say. Church.
Enough of this garbage. You don't like it here. You want to speak Spanish? Go back.
Yeah, registration and insurance.
Yeah, go ahead, South Carolina.
I've got to go to lunch, but then I'll come back. I'll be back this afternoon.
I think he's on a phone call.
I'm sorry, y'all. I thought I had to beat it.
South Carolina, what are we having for lunch today?
I'm not telling. I'm going to have lobster.
Oh.
Get your surfboard.
Hey, listen, though. Listen,
hey, where do I sign up for that? I want to sign up for that. I got to go do that.
But Tracy, if you do this, you're turning the whole United States judicial system on its ear.
This is just New Mexico.
No, it sets a precedent.
Listen, do you understand what it means to set a precedent? When you set a precedent, the South Carolina Supreme or State Court back in 1957 had a little school. Okay, that was the catalyst for Brown versus the Board of Education, right there in Somerton, South Carolina. That was a precedent-setting case. Okay, it went from the local to the district courts, and so on and so forth, on up to the Supreme Court.
Okay, states across the country have required with the voter registration cards and voter IDs. States have passed that. And so according to you, it's set a precedent nationally. But what happens is when it reaches the state Supreme Court or the federal Supreme Court, it gets overturned. So what's going to happen is if this thing goes to another state, someone will challenge it. It has not yet been challenged at the federal level yet, correct?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Right, so this hasn't even been challenged federally yet. This is a long way from playing out of what's going to happen. This is one state, okay, and it's on a border town, yes. Now, is Minnesota going to pass this? Probably not. But in the future of this tyrannical, apocalyptic society that we're building here.
You're not getting it. You're not getting it, man.
Let me say it this way. Go ahead, Sal.
When you set a precedent, okay, when you go to court, these things are cited. It's just like you go into court and you're trying to prove your case. You show that and there's another case out there that has shown that you're right and it sets the precedent.
This is just a law that's been passed, correct?
But let me say no.
It was a Supreme Court ruling, which means, and it was against the prosecution, so. That's going to be pretty much what the law is in New Mexico for a while until that issue is addressed. And you're right; it won't end up in federal court. It'll go up through the state courts in New Mexico before it gets to the Supreme Court. And I'll tell you what the circumstance will be: when you have somebody that's wrongfully convicted because the juror couldn't speak English, then you're going to have a problem.
You remember you have to vote by unanimously, I believe it is.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Sometimes every state's different as to how juries work. But Florida, you look at Trayvon, there were only six jurors on that. So sometimes they can do it with a majority, 10-2, 12-1, 11-1.
But if you can't reason within the language and make rational decisions within the language and communicate within the language, how can you debate your view if you don't speak the same language in the same room?
In the jury room. How do you imagine sitting
who decides
room?
Who's on the jury? Who gets to decide who's on the jury?
The lawyers do. They do. Mark, you can speak
to that. Yeah, there's a pool that comes in, and the jurors, is all the jurors, you might have a pool of 100 or 200 jurors, fill out a form. And one of the questions they ask on the form is, do you understand English? And what happened in this particular case, as I understand it, was that this particular juror said, no, and the judge dismissed this jury right off the top of the bat, saying, you don't speak English, you can't sit in on the case. That doesn't preclude each lawyer is given challenges to the jurors, and the defendant's lawyer, could have said, asked the question himself, do you speak English, and then use one of his peremptory challenges against that individual. The problem is, with, No, no. The problem I'm trying to say is if they've already said that you can't dismiss a, the judge can't dismiss a juror because he doesn't speak English, they can make the argument that neither can the juror. Because, for example, a peremptory challenge can't be made against anyone because of their race. It can't be made against anyone because of their gender. It can't be made against anyone because of their sexual preference. And now they're going to add it can't be done because they don't speak the language. That's how it works. So, no, it although basically you think it would solve the problem, if it's gone that far on the New Mexico Supreme Court, at least in New Mexico, the next step is the attorney for the defendant can't, or the prosecution can't dismiss the individual because of language. And that's how it grows. Anybody that's a lawyer will tell you, laws start as a small little seed, and then they expand the point slowly, but they expand.
I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends. See, I'll turn the phone calls off. You guys can talk during the break. The number is 347-945-5229. All the phone lines are on. We want to hear from you today. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600.
Frame House.
All right, so who's here?
I'm here, Larry.
South Carolina's here.
Who said I'm here, Larry? Who was that? The guy on the phone?
I'm on the phone.
All right. So I honestly, I'm dumbfounded about the whole border state thing. I don't understand that argument because, as I said, we had issues with people understanding English years ago, and it went into your airports where they asked you, where they would say a message in English and then again in Spanish. They would have other things. They would have, you know, you go to the grocery store, all the pamphlets that they hand out is in both. You go and buy something from Walmart, it's got 30 different languages in the box. It spreads. It will spread if you do this. I don't care if it's a border state or not. The idea will spread, and it will become a cancer again for this country with this Spanish-English thing.
I just look at it. There could be a national language. Who used the term balkanization. It's sort of like, why are people like Texas? Texas is thriving with immigrants or U.S. citizens. People are moving from California to go to Texas. Why? Because of the jobs. And, but then they make some of the same thing. And they want to duplicate what's going on in Texas. You know what I mean? It's like the illegal immigrant here. I mean, everybody wants to follow the rule of law. Well, what part of illegal immigrant don't you understand? And if you really want to talk to somebody that's upset about immigration in the United States, talk to an immigrant that immigrated here legally and the challenges and hurdles they had to do, and they're the ones that are really anti-amnesty for everybody here.
Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I know a guy who's been fighting to become a citizen, clean record. He has all his ducks in the order and has had it for 10 years, and he still hasn't had a shot at getting his citizenship. I don't know why it takes so long for people to get in, especially when your background's been checked and checks out fine. You know, everything checks out, but he's been waiting 10 years to become a citizen of this country. That's a major problem, too.
But as far as, you know, the reason, and I think it was South Carolina, I was talking about setting a precedent. You know, just like Tracy tried to say, there are a huge population of Somalis down in Columbus. Now, what happens when one of these Somalis are in there and they want to cite the case law? Because that's what they'll do. They'll say, you know, state versus so-and-so in New Mexico. And now the state of Ohio is having to go through the same thing down there.
Yeah.
And if you start hitting little stuff like that, sounds good, we're going to do all this for all these immigrants coming in. But that costs money. Like, I don't know if it was you or somebody, they was telling you how the difference between the UN and everything. Well, the UN, everybody's kicking into that kitty. Now, if every municipal court has to go and hire a translator, because of this case law that now becomes, you know, mushrooms out and goes all over the place, you can't afford that. Hell, we can't afford what we're doing already, and we just keep wanting to add to it. That doesn't make sense.
Well, that's just creating jobs for illegals, like Hispanics that can speak English. If they come over illegally and they're capable of speaking Spanish and English, they're going to have jobs, and Americans aren't, that don't know Spanish. So
who's
you got to learn Spanish to get a job.
Who's going to hire illegals to do jobs like that? You think illegals are going to be hired in the court system? Where do you think illegals are going to be hired where they're not going to have...
Illegals are getting driver's licenses and food stamps and welfare. What makes you think they can't get a job?
Well,
yeah, with the
difference.
City.
There's a difference. There's a difference.
Well, there was
because
a difference
in order to too. in order to get a job through the court or through some type of municipal or state government, you're going to have to show U.S. citizenship. As far as food stamps and everything, I have difficulties with that as well.
What does it take to show U.S. citizenship? What does it take?
Well, passport, birth certificate.
Well, think about
you don't. Nobody. Most people don't have passport.
Pardon me. I use my passport when I need. But I also have a birth certificate, but I'm also a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
Okay, so sure. In order to work for any government, you're going to have a birth certificate.
Well, I'm pretty sure that there's some scrutiny there.
Sure, you
got
I'm
from Los Angeles County. I've been in the courts and have watched how it works, and there's always a Spanish translator handy.
Okay.
Because of the large amount of Spanish-speaking people.
And let me ask you something. Where are they from?
Can I finish my thought?
Well, go ahead. That's what I'm asking you.
I'd be happy to answer your question. I'm just trying to call. I'm just trying to call it
there. Here on WSLM AM 600, the number 347-945-5229. It's 1245. Got about 15 minutes before I go to the top of the hour news break. Mark Mangi's in studio with me. Today is Thursday, and it is the 15th of August. Time is running by. I don't know what in the world happened. I left you guys with warm weather. I come back on, and I saw a girl in a coat this morning. So if you need to explain it to me. Yes, we turned the furnace on, so I don't understand what's going on here. This is August.
That's global warming. Well, I'm back to the point. Back to the point where we were.
What's up, dude?
Hey. Dude, I gotta open up because I'm on terrestrial radio as well as blog talk. Okay. So I gotta get all this out. And so once I get it out, then I'll let you guys tell me what you were talking about during the break. Okay.
I don't know what's going on, but I'll play along.
Play along for a minute.
Yeah.
Listen, want you guys to know, if you guys are looking for a place to take your dog to get groomed, you got to go out to Pet Spa out on West Reserve Road. And Joy will take care of you. They will keep your dog clean. They will groom them. They do both dogs and cats. And you will be surprised. And so they're located about a quarter of a mile of maybe 100 yards, maybe 200 yards from Glenwood and Western Reserve. The address is 1122 Western Reserve Road. You can find them and call them at 330-758-4444. And I am here, and I need to find out, what are you guys talking about in the room, and who's the new person in there? How you
I'm
doing?
Brown Beasley. I'm the new person.
Hi, Brown Beasley. Great
Hi.
To have you with us.
Thank you.
So what were you talking about?
The gentleman was saying, I'm not sure who it was, that he felt that illegal aliens were getting translator jobs, and I just...
That's not what I said, but go ahead.
Well, I'm paraphrasing you. I'm paraphrasing.
Well, you're not. You're not doing a good job, but go ahead.
Go ahead and say, well, you know what?
What did you say, Alabama?
What I said was, okay, sir, you going to let me talk? You trying to tell him what I said? Let me tell him what I said.
I'm not emotional about this. I like Spanish people.
I don't have
the difficulties you see.
Who said I didn't like them?
Hold on.
You can hear it in your voice that you're a little bit...
Whoa. Be nice. Brown, we be really, really... Be nice. And Alabama, you be nice too, because we treat new callers them nice before we beat them up.
No, this is an emotional issue, and people, their emotions get involved. I understand,
but we like people who speak Latin, speak Spanish. I don't have a problem with Latino people. I think it's a good thing.
Oh man,
let the gentleman state his case, because maybe I misunderstood him.
I think you did.
Okay,
Alabama.
Well, the point I was trying to make was that. The way that the Democrats have and Republicans are moving right now, and I didn't get a chance to say this part of it, they had an illegal alien speaking at their convention for the DNC this year. So, I mean, my thing is this. Oh, okay, however you – I forget the word term, the new term.
Immigrant.
Immigrant. Yeah, illegal immigrant.
Undocumented.
Okay.
What's illegal about a human being in the world? God likes you more than he likes them?
This is the thing, though. No, that's a great question, but the fundamental purpose of government is to protect borders. That is the first fundamental, that is it. That is there. That was back. Go back to 1770 when we first had the American Revolution. We are a country. We have borders. There are laws that have to be adhered to. I can't I can't just go as an American citizen into Russia, China, or different. We can't wind up in jail.
Hold up, Alabama. Make your point.
The only point I was trying to make was let's streamline the actual immigration process. Let's not make it where it takes 10 years to become an American citizen. But at the same time, let's not reward illegal behavior. If there are rules, you have to follow. Just like you have a 9-to-5 or a job, and there are rules, and you break the rules, let's not reward it. Like Johnny Manziel from Texas A&M is getting rewarded because they're going to let him play because he's good. That's not good. We shouldn't do that. That's all I was saying. Now, as far as dislike or disdain for Hispanics, I don't know where that came from. But I said let them follow the rules.
That you would call.
You cannot. First of all, when I first came in here, you said, let me finish. Wow. I said, well, I'll make you point.
Look at how angry you are.
We're not angry. He's passionate.
Alabama.
Hold up. Brown, I want to hear your point.
All right. I mean, how can you refer to another human being as illegal? What gives you that authority?
Emotion.
Now let me finish. Now, you wanted to go back in history a little bit, and just calling the game fair, in 1750, all of this land, all of the Southwest, including California and Texas, was Mexico. Who intruded on whose borders?
Wait a minute.
You're wrong on that one.
If I want your land and we go to war, where America gets it really, really crazy now is if I win, it should be called the United States of whatever.
No,
or whatever
I
we want to call
land,
it.
Tracy, if I want your
that's
land,
called
and
the spoils
I have the mightier
of war.
Force, I take your land.
I may
no,
take
it
your
was
land.
It's
not about legal or illegal. It makes
what
about what it
was
is.
Purchase. There was a war. There was a war between
the Indians and war against each other and take each other's land. The Indians didn't take each other's land. He just all was one big family, right? They got along fine. There was no war beforehand.
There's hundreds
now all of a sudden that we
think
that those
there's hundreds
okay,
of Indian
hold on,
tribes
guys.
And each situation is different. You're being very general. I'm being pretty specific.
You're being general.
No, well, everything
because they only
Southwest,
had this. Mexico was only
Mexico,
in California
Arizona,
for 20 years, dude.
California
you're only talking about
one,
20 years.
Hold
you're not
on,
talking about
Alabama.
A
Alabama,
the
Alabama. Hold up. Go ahead, Brown. I want to hear what you got to say.
No, well, if you look at the sands of time, okay. 200 years, it really isn't that much time. 200 years ago, where I am right now in California, Arizona, New Mexico, was Mexico. The state of Texas was Mexico. Okay? After wars, and these were wars of conquest of land. These were wars
right.
of conquest of land that not only eliminated and attacked and created genocide or against brown people. This was wars of white supremacy, manifest destiny, that caused the spread of so-called America throughout and took over the entire West.
Okay,
so this was New Mexico. So now the people over the past 30, 40, 50 years, the natural migration, God didn't approve of these borders that man made. What you're doing, you have bought. Well,
go ahead.
I don't know.
I want to hear what he does say.
Is God something that's important to you? God consider these people illegal?
Man,
are these human beings entitled to wow. – you're laughing. Listen to yourself. And you probably call yourself a Christian. That's what's really so funny.
Well, that has nothing to do with it, dude. Whoa, 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 whoa. That has nothing to do.
I just made a subjective observation. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong.
You're not, but you shouldn't do that. That's not a good way to do that.
Why not? Let me finish. I challenge him to answer the question.
Brown, listen here. When you have a conquest, you've seen this over the eras of time. When you take a land, you get to own it. Even what's going on in the Middle East right now, you see what's happening. And if you say that you're a Christian, then you really understand what's going on with the Islam. I didn't say that.
I said the gentleman was.
I said you understand it. So you mean you have to understand, Palestine said that was their land, and when it was given back to the state of Israel, the reason why they're fighting against it, right? You understand that, right?
You open up a whole other can of worms. That's a different situation, but it's
Hold up. Alabama, wait a minute. It might have been a whole other can of worms, but you have to understand, if I come over to your house, we go to war, and I take your land, it may not be what you like, but it is the rules of war. It is what it is. And it's called spoils. It's been going on for thousands of years. The spoils of war. You go in and you can actually overthrow and document and possess a land. But what we're saying is, we're talking about languages. That's how we got here. And talking about English as the language of the United States of America. And when you start putting people who do not speak English or understand the English language onto a jury, it makes it unfair for people who are actually in the room. Because how can you actually debate the law as a juror and then the elements of the crime if you don't speak the language? That's the whole issue. And this is not about the Mexican people or people that speak any other language, whether you like them or dislike them. The problem is, when you come to my house,
If you want to participate, I agree. I feel now,
with everything that I've said, I have a broader view than most, okay? Maybe you agree with it, maybe you don't. But I also believe that if you want to participate in the courts and if you want to participate in the structure of the system the way that it is now, yes, you should speak English.
But what I'm also saying is, see, this is what I have a problem with America. When you come to my house, then you go by my rules. If you don't want to go by my rules, then you shouldn't come to my house. Right now, America is changing all of its rules to govern everybody, and you can't please everybody and do it the right way. There should be guidelines, there should be rules, and there should be standards. And America is trying to blur those lines. And so right now, when Mark comes in with this politically correctness mess, you can't be politically correct and be right all the time. And sometimes you just have to be hurt my feelings and me not like it and just get over it. That's what's wrong with our kids today.
But Tracy, also, just to add to what you just said, if you really look at it, I was on food stamps a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago, and I came in there. It was full of Hispanics getting the stuff. Now, people need food. They're struggling or whatever. Okay, fine. But if we're going to do that, if we're going to give people free stuff, then this country won't last too much longer because it is going bankrupt because we all print $100 billion and emotions have overcome logic. Well, he's a person. He's a human being. Well, guess what? I can think of 50 things to do for one person that at the end of the day, but you have to have certain things as an American citizen. Just like in Rome, if you were a Roman citizen, you had rights.
But let me throw this into the mix. Hold on. Let me throw this also into the mix. The problem is not that people are coming over here and they're standing in line. The problem is that we are promoting for people who are standing in a line that's there to come over here. We have a marketing program there for people to come here to take resources here. But our system was not designed for it to be a taking society. We quit. Even Social Security was not supposed to be a place of entitlement. What it is, Social Security was a place of long-term investment. And it's almost like a bad Ponzi scheme gone bad.
Social Security was a tax.
I was supposed to receive a reimbursement on my tax for what I paid into it. And what's happening now, we have people who are taking out of it and never paying into it. Our tax code, was never supposed to be one where people were not paying into it. And now we have thousands and millions of people who are not paying into it. Our judicial system was not supposed to be one that was supposed to have long-term residents. It was supposed to be a place of rehabilitation, not a place of permanent residency. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to turn the phone lines off. You guys can go ahead a conversation. The number is 347-945-5229.
Be nice, guys.
Yeah, be nice.
Be nice.
And we'll see you on the other side of my break.
Boardman Frame House Gallery.
Alabama?
Yeah.
What do you got to say, man?
I mean, I honestly, my thing is, if it's almost like, look, I have no problem with people becoming American citizens. We need to streamline the process itself. That's the most logical thing to do to make it a difference of not having to take 10 years. And I think that's the best answer, not rewarding illegal behavior. Because if people would say, okay, well, it's only going to take me 6 months to be here, then they'll probably consider it. But people are coming over because they're like, well, I can't do it, and it's going to take 30 years, so I might as well just come. Then I think that's the fault of the government, and I think it's the fault of the people that are breaking the law. I mean, it's just fair. I mean, it's not a thing of if you're not paying into the system, if you look at the amount of money, they have a net drain on the California. That's why it's going bankrupt. I mean, it's just a fact. Your state, whatever your name is, going bankrupt because people are coming there with the same mentality. Free,
actually,
I'm a person.
Actually, our state balanced the budget. We cut a lot of services, and it's cut a lot of parks and all kinds of other things.
But you're losing a lot of wealthy people that are the biggest bulk of your taxpayers are going to Texas.
Not everybody wants to be in Texas. It's hot in there, and there's no ocean, at least in the majority of the state. I'm staying right here, no matter what it costs. I got a question for the person that said they were on food stamps a few years ago.
That's me.
When they went into the county office. Now you see Hispanic people. How were you able to tell if they were citizens or not?
Man, come on, man. Are you serious?
No. Answer the question.
Okay. Hold on. I asked the girl that I used because the girl was a girl I dated in high school that was my caseworker, and I asked her. She said herself, they're here. She said they'll come in with 6 and 7 different EIN numbers for different kids that they claim, and they're walking out of there with $2,000 in food stamps.
So,
and she said
so
illegals,
knows,
and hold on,
so
she said a lot
so
of them are coming.
Hold on,
you asked a real good question.
Fraud. So she knows.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on.
It's not fraud because what I'm saying is she told me out her mouth, the worker for the actual county said that they were illegals, but they would have kids that were born over here, and then they would get part of it too. All of them would get it. They'll come over here and have anchor babies, and they're dropping 6 or 7 at a time. I mean, these people are coming over here, and they're getting $1,500 a month in food stamps. I mean, it happens all the time.
I never got a dollar in food stamps all my life. So, but
what else? You've been blessed. That's good. That's a good situation.
All right. Well, that's good.
Have you ever dated a Spanish woman?
I married a Spanish woman. My wife is Puerto Rican.
Oh, okay. Well, that's different. But what I'm saying is I've been in the Dominican Republic and dated all types of Latin women. I don't have a problem with Hispanics. That's not the issue.
Alabama.
I'm just asking a question.
Let me speak real quick. Because
who's speaking?
See, I run into this all the time, and it really bugs the absolute H-E-double hockey sticks out of me. When someone says, well, have you ever dated a Hispanic? No, and that has nothing to do with it. You're talking about dealing with people. No, but you're implying that the man's a racist because of
exactly.
What he said.
No, well, Hispanic isn't a race, but he does seem to have a bone up his
because somebody wants people to do things the right way,
I have a problem. You're thinking emotionally because you're married to a Latin woman, which is cool.
No, you're basing your whole argument on what if this was my wife, which I understand.
Alabama,
hold on a second. He's not married to a Spanish woman. I am. This is
right.
Matt.
I can't tell the boys apart. I just wouldn't marry them.
You get the bread for free. Why buy the bakery? That's what my grandmother used to say. But go ahead.
My thing is, man, look, all I said, my argument was this. And the thing is, let's establish logic, okay, as men. We're men, we're supposed to think logically, right? We all can agree. So this is the number one thing. If I come and I give you a logical statement and say let's streamline the process, then we have to take off the table that is personal. So let's just start with the below-the-belt blows that you're taking about me being racist and hating Hispanics and saying, okay, it's not that. Because if that same guy can come over here legally, I don't have a problem with it. I want to see more African people over here, too. I'm black. I have a dog in the fight, so, yeah, I do. But guess what? I've been to Africa, and I've seen how hard it is for them to get over here. But they're not letting other people just jump the fence and come over, be it black, from Brazilians, Honduran, all type of people from other countries. And I think that's wrong. I think they need to streamline the process to where it don't take 6 or 7 years to do it. I got a friend from the Bahamas. It took him a decade. He just got it. It took him a long time.
Are you aware that since the economic downturn of 2008, that there are multitudes of illegal immigrants from south of the border or undocumented workers, because that's really what they are, and they're here for a reason. They're here to work, the majority of them, the great majority of them, that there's been a decrease in the amount of people coming over. And
and I got a friend that's a police officer, and he was telling me about different people we have no way of tracking. See, as an American citizen, I don't even agree with certain. I'm more libertarian, but there are some benefits of knowing who a person is. If there are times where they don't know, and you've had people that molest kids coming, just like we got scum here, just like you got scum everywhere, and they come and do certain things. And then this guy got five, and the only way you know is by running the fingerprints. But if you stop him in a traffic stop, you don't know who he is. So, I mean, it's kind of – and then a lot of times these guys get deported and come right back. I think in Florida they had a rash of children murders because you got child murderers coming to Florida killing people. They're illegal.
What's really scary is that somebody may sneak through the border and smuggle an atomic bomb and be a terrorist and really cause some damage. That is scary. That is frightening, and that could happen. And that it hasn't happened in the past 10 years is a bit of a surprise to me. So that is something to be concerned about.
My thing is, I'd rather see a person come in the front door than come in to sneak. I'd rather see them come in the front door. They got rights. They can get accounts. They can have everything they have. It's just let's do it the right way.
You mentioned yourself how difficult it is for the people to do things right. You know, I talk to Comcast sometimes. I have to call for customer service, and the call gets rerouted to Guadalajara. And I talk to some of the people there, particularly the women, and the woman will say that she's a veterinarian and that she studied in the U.S. and she got her degrees in the U.S., but she couldn't practice as a veterinarian because she couldn't get her paperwork right as a citizenship. So she goes back to where she's from, and she works as a customer service person for Comcast. And I'm thinking, well, why didn't you just stay like everybody else? There are people that try to do it right, and it's harder to do it right.
So, sir, saying what you said, which makes perfect sense, it does, why are we not trying to fight for the government, like what Alabama was saying, to streamline the system and get that done instead of just granting amnesty to anybody and everybody who comes flying across the border? Why are we even fighting about it and not after our government to do things right?
Because it's about votes.
Oh, come on. Our government, no matter what party and what administration's there, is attacking us on so many levels, you know, from spying on us, you know, from spying on us and tracking us to, come on. There's too many battles to fight. If you guys are anything like me, I'm not trying to live day to day, but I'm just trying to keep my household straight. And that keeps my life simpler. All of these other things that are going on, I'm concerned about them, but am I going to get uptight and emotional about them? I don't have a lot of control over all this other stuff. I watch it. I have an opinion. And I also try not to get caught up into what the media tries to do to us, and it sets us all against each other when we really have more in common. We're trying to put people pro-abortion or anti-abortion.
Well, let me say this. I used to be a real estate investor. Brown, I used to make a lot of money flipping houses, and most of my workers, except maybe two or three of them, were actual illegals. I disagreed. I told them I disagreed with them coming here, but at the end of the day, I started out with African Americans. Let me finish the point. I started out with guys, and those guys didn't show up. I had a bunch of mess. So these guys showed up to work. They did the job, and I paid them. If they were legal, it would be so much better. It would, because guess what? There were times where they wanted their money cash, and they had certain banks. And this was back in like 06. It's a lot easier now.
You could have hired legal laborers if you wanted to. You could have hired union laborers if you wanted to. And you would have paid an.
Wait. You must have never been in Alabama.
I'm not that familiar with Alabama. I'm from Los Angeles. They call that Lower Alabama, but it's not the same thing. Had there been unionized, so-called
union. We don't have unionized workers in Alabama like that, but go ahead. We don't have that.
Well, at any rate, you could have paid twice as much for labor than what you did pay, which would have cut into your profit. So, I mean.
No. I paid those guys. I paid them real good. I paid them. That's another myth that these guys are coming over here working. These are skilled laborers. They know what they're worth. People ain't stupid. These Hispanics aren't stupid. They coming over here. You catch one that he just got here, yeah, he'll come for a cheap price. But you talk to one been over here for a year, these guys want $15, $16, $20 an hour because they know they're skilled workers.
I tried to go to the Home Depot to get them to move me, and they wouldn't take $10 an hour. I'm like, you guys would rather sit here and not do shit and look at each other instead of making $10 an hour? They said, moving $15. I ended up paying them what they wanted. So I've experienced that, too. Is it still cheaper than – go ahead.
I just want to warn you really quick. Tracy does go over the airwaves right now. We're not on the airwaves, so just watch the language when she comes back.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry if I curse. I'm used to cursing on these blogs.
No biggie. I just didn't know if you knew it was
I appreciate Alabama being, you know, he speaks with emotion, but when he speaks a little bit more, he's being honest. You know, he's saying I have a difficulty, you know, with all these, you know, he calls them illegals. Let's just call them undocumented. It's politically correct. I don't think anybody's illegal.
It's illegal if you're coming into a country and you're not a citizen and you're trying to stay past your green card. That is an illegal process.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can call it what you want.
I'm back. And I appreciate what you're talking about. That was pretty good. But I do have to say, I saw something where you put in there, Matt, about the Bible saying something where you're supposed to go by the laws of man. Yeah, it does say that.
The Bible says a lot of things, but that's right, exactly. That's why we go by the laws of man and not by the laws of the Bible.
No, don't get me wrong. If you ask me, the laws of the Bible should be coincide with the laws of man. But, you know, we lost our mind.
They don't contradict. Like, and when they contradict, I wouldn't have turned people into concentration camps back in the day. I wouldn't have done that. I don't care what the law said. But when the law says, this person, not kill them, don't harm them, but just have them come in and do the paperwork the right way, that's not harming them. It's not harming them at all.
But we do need to reform our immigration laws. We do. But let me say it this way. Let me say this is what makes our country so backward. And this is what infuriates me about our country. We can come up with a system that can make a drone the size of a gnat. But we can't put together a system for our wounded warriors so that they can make sure that we take care of them for standing on the front lines to keep our freedom free. You got to understand our priorities here in America. That's what makes me upset. We have the technology and the know-it-all that we can do so much, but we can't take care of our wounded warriors. So how can they take care of America on the Affordable Health Care Act?
You're interjecting a lot of different things. It's hard to address what you're saying.
But it's all the same. It's all the same. Systems and rules and order. Immigration is not rocket science. This is what happens when you come here. You must come through this process. This is the process, and this is how you go. It's not that hard. I don't see how we've made it so complicated to where we had amnesty 35 years ago, and we need to do it almost all over again because we got 30 million people who are illegal in our country, and we don't know what to do with them. That's crazy.
Well, hold on, Tracy. Oh, you just made a good point, a very good point, because within the Affordable Health Care Act, the AHA bill, surprise, it basically says that if you're an employer and you hire an illegal, you won't have to pay into the bill. So it's going to push American citizens who were born here it's going to basically reward that behavior. It's going to reward it. Because if I'm an employer, I mean, people don't go in business. I guess I'm the bad guy. I guess, and another myth that we people like to say
truth.
Is.
You're just telling the truth.
No, it's like people like to tell a story like, well, the guys are wealthy people, our business owners are selfish. Average normal workers are just as selfish. They feel like they deserve more money for working in, even if they haven't increased productivity. So it's everybody can be greedy. So let's not just demonize somebody for saying, you know what, I'm not making any money. I didn't go in business to be paying all this money. So nine times out of ten, they probably are going to hire that illegal. But who put that in the bill? You see what I'm saying? This bill is just a part of the systemic problem. It's because they're trying to lump it all together and make it and reward illegal behavior, which I mean, undocumented behavior or whatever.
But what I said is going back to what we I think we talked about a little bit earlier. The common sense politically correct, we got this politically correct thing going on, but we don't have common sense with it. There are so many things and so many systems within our United States government that are so asinine. It makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't know where this country, along the line, lost its sense of doing what makes common sense to do. Somehow we've gotten the idea that we all have rights and nobody's going to trample on anybody else's rights and nobody's going to tell me what to do. And that attitude's permeating through this through our society, generally speaking. It is not healthy.
Hold on a second.
And it's more than just the immigration issue. Because
It's hilarious to hear him say something that he's saying. Let's just take these undocumented people out of the equation for a moment. This country was founded on people having rights to avoid, to fight the tyranny. To fight taxation without representation. Yeah. So you're acting like there's something wrong with having rights.
The issue is that we all can't have 100% rights because the way human nature is and the way society works, trampling on your rights for my rights is bad. Trampling on my rights for your rights is bad, and this is what they're doing. So who's got rights?
It's really simple.
I have a right to live in a country that has secure borders. I have a right, you know, to make sure that I'm able to work and keep my money.
You have a right to go to work and not have some lunatic come shoot it up. You should be safe there.
Mr. Brown, listen, I'm on terrestrial radio. So you have to excuse when I cut in like this. We have to do this one at a time because if you step on each other as we're talking,
right,
I get complaints about it being a train wreck. So I need
to
hear both sides. So Mark, what were you saying?
I'm saying that there needs to be the idea that you're going to protect everybody's individual right. For example, you know, we're talking about immigrants here today or illegal aliens. They're here in this country. They don't have any rights. But they do. What rights do they have? They don't. You know, what are they doing here? They don't belong here. There's something called rule of law. Rule of law is the foundation of our society. That is at the base of American jurisprudence. No man is above the law. And if you're going to look at anything that's happened over the last 5 years in this country, it's been the collapse of rule of law in order of political correctness. And it doesn't work because then people start to lose faith in what's governing us and lose faith in our jurisprudence system. And I really, I don't want to live in a jurisprudence system where there's somebody sitting on a jury that doesn't speak English. I'm sorry, I'm a lawyer. It won't work. And you can harangue from now to the end of time about how everybody's rights. Well, you know what? I'm worried about the rights of the defendant and the integrity of the system. Because if that collapses because somebody is incensed that they can't serve on a jury, that's too darn bad. Don't like it? Go home.
Hey, Mr. Brown?
Well, he's right when he says, I mean, it's really simple. The rights in this country are reserved for U.S. citizens. The Constitution is for U.S. citizens, not for undocumented workers or illegal immigrants or people from other countries. I agree there.
Do you agree that it's right or wrong?
That it's right or wrong that what?
Do you agree that should be what you just said? That should be, or do you
think that's the way that the law reads? That's the way the law reads
That's the intention. That's the spirit of the law, or the lawyer would know the term better than me. That's the way that the law is laid out. It's not necessarily the spirit of the law.
And I think I just got a text message from Styx.
Yeah.
Who basically said you can't have a right that requires an action of another person, and I think that makes sense. Everybody starts. Nobody has an absolute right to do anything. So you're not going to be able to yell fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
I may have a right to be on the sidewalk, but I don't have a right to go around walking in a way that's going to hurt the other person.
That's correct.
And so, you know, there are limitations on rights. What we have taken to the nth degree is that when it comes to certain areas of the law, that there are no limitations on rights. We all have to be big boys and big girls and realize that we all have to get along. That's rude. We don't even have common courtesy in this country anymore. It's all shot to kingdom come.
I don't understand.
When
was
there to function? Everything's blowing up in our face, and we can't survive this way, folks. We just can't do it.
So when
there's
got to
be some protocol and some understanding how things work. And
one more thing, and I'll be quiet.
If you look at what the president's doing with Obamacare right now, he wanted it, he passed it. Now, selectively, he's deciding which parts of the law he's going to enforce. He's the president of the United States. You enforce all the laws. That's what he's supposed to do. Because if he starts selective enforcing that law, he'll selectively enforce that law. And that goes for any president of any party. You want to change the law, go change it. But you enforce what's on the books. And they haven't done that across the board.
The immigration laws haven't been enforced for decades.
Say that again?
The immigration laws, as far as people working here that are not here legally, that hasn't been enforced for decades, or that's enforced selectively. That goes on all over. That's because there's a demand for these workers to be here. What no one's mentioning is that the real driving force in this country. I let everyone else talk. Go ahead.
I haven't said anything. Here's the problem you run into. Even though there's a demand, you still have the law enforced. But if you've got an administration that will selectively gut the agency that is supposed to regulate, or the agency that's supposed to guard against it, or won't do the thing that it's supposed to, like put a fence on the border to keep the folks out, what in the world do you expect is going to happen?
I mean, this administration, I mean, look at the lax enforcement.
The lax enforcement of what? Of immigration?
Of environmental laws under the Bush administration. He put people in charge of departments that were anything but in favor of enforcing or having something to do with keeping the environment in good shape. So, I mean, to single out any one administration, they're all the same.
But you heard Mark said it's on both administrations. It goes down the line. But going back to what I said, if you really look at what goes on in our government system, we don't handle the business at large with common sense and let me go back to my analogy on
what do you attribute that to?
It comes from lack of oversight from the American people, because we don't hold our politicians accountable, and they put people in there and not doing their jobs, and there's no accountability measures to measure what they do. It's like
could it also be that our politicians are just so sly and so slick and so good at talking at both sides of their mouth, and
that's
that there's so many different issues,
and
that people are so concerned with just paying their bills.
We have become a selfish society because it's us, me and my four and no more. And as a matter of fact, you can kick my other three out, and as long as you take care of me, it is what it is. Because we no longer take care of anyone else, including our own children. So when we give our children over to the government for them to teach them,
listen to what you're saying right now, and listen to how it applies to the bigger picture. No, it's just interesting.
I mean, it is true. And so when
I'm not saying that it's not true. I'm not saying that
it's
not
giving,
true.
And we're giving, and so when I am, if I'm leaving my child to be raised by television, and I tell a man he's no longer important in my life, and I tell a woman she's nothing but a baby getter, and if she doesn't want the child, she can kill it. And I go through all of these things, and the government regulates it and puts these laws on the books. And we wonder why we're in this selfish society who doesn't care about anyone else. That's America is not built like that. America is built on a collective agreement of people. And then you put people in there, and they lie to your face. They don't do their jobs. They hire people who are not responsible.
They're professional,
and they have
professional liars.
And they have no systems. And at the end of the day, when it all boils down, we all are getting screwed because no one's paying attention to the bigger picture. And we have dumbed down the American electorate so much, they go and vote and think that they're doing something big. In actuality, all they're doing is selecting another person to be controlled by someone that you don't know their name to.
So now I want to talk a little bit about an example of how this stuff works. As you take a look at what's going on with the Internal Revenue Service right now, my local comment is Jim Trafficking was right.
He was right.
He was absolutely right. And if he were in Congress right now, this garbage wouldn't be going on.
A lot of it.
Yeah. But what they've done, okay, here is a – and you got to look at the premise of the current administration, which is government is your friend. Government can help you. Government's there to do things for you, and we have to have trust in the government. And what does he do? He screws 50% of the population of the United States. Now,
who is this?
The president.
Oh.
With the IRS, you go after the conservatives. This is a 50-50 nation. Now, it's a matter of degree. What happens to the people who already had a mistrust of the IRS? Now it's, you know, been gone. They giant-sized that mistrust. What do you do with that? Who's going to, you know, people are going to cheat. People are going to hide money. The economy is going to go underground. And the government's going to, you know, not get the money they deserve. And they're going to be, and they've got people, they want their kids to call on mom and dad if you see them doing something wrong. They're sending out threatening letters to small businesses. They sent out 20,000 letters to small businesses saying that you're underpaying and there's no way you can respond to that letter. Who are these people? Because if they can do it to one person, they can do it to everybody. And it's high time this country stand up and say enough.
You can't, Mark, because we've dumbed America down so much that they don't know who to stand up on. Right now, they don't know the difference between the vice president, the president of the Senate, and the speaker of the House.
The press is the watchdog, and the press hasn't done their job.
And we've allowed it.
Yeah, we've allowed it. And and finally, you know, here's my partisan pitch for the day. At long last, Reince Priebus grew a pair and stood up and told CNN and NBC, no, we're not doing that. And it's about time they did it because I'm tired of having these smarmy, elite, Eastern snobs, and that's what they are, looking down their nose at me because I happen to think a certain way. Screw them. And that's what the country's got to tell these people. They've got to look in their face and say, no, I'm not doing that. Because that's the only thing that gets these folks to back down. It's all of our rights that are important, the fundamental right to exist, to be free, to be able to pursue your happiness and pursue your dreams. That's the base, and it's being destroyed piece by piece.
And listen, I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends. The phone lines are still on. Hey, South Carolina, you guys your lines are on. Matt, you guys can go ahead and continue your conversation. Not so blind, Mike, your mic is on, just so that you know that. The number is 347-945-5229. It's 27 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock here on the 15th of August, 2013. We'll see you on the other side of our break.
Mark, you there?
This is Beasley.
Hello.
Oh, yeah, you got the.
Oh, no, Mark,
got
Mark
Brown.
In the studio.
Oh, Mark
Mark's
in the studio,
studio,
because
yeah.
She said Mark could talk to us and continue the conversation. Okay. Hey, South Carolina, how you doing?
What's up, dog?
Hey.
Woof,
woof. Woof, woof. Hey, is Alabama still here?
Yeah.
How
there
you
he
doing?
Is.
How you doing, Alabama? So when are we all getting together for a family reunion? I feel like we should.
I don't know. I'm new. I don't really like you guys that much.
Well, that's
no,
okay.
I'm kidding. You guys are civil, and you guys speak from the heart. So,
now, Brown, you've been a good addition. I'll tell you what. You've gotten me shaking a couple times, but I love it. You know, I love the conversation.
Well, I just, you know, I don't know. I did. that I have a broader scope of this whole thing, and it's really not about politics. You know, what it's the real bigger picture is that the way that the big money interests really do control both parties.
Sure. Yeah, you don't have a broader aspect.
We all share that thought.
They control both parties. Any legislation, anything that comes through, or any the media is out here to try to make things kind of black and white, or to hit on people's emotion. I don't care about gay marriage. Let gay people be married. Let them be miserable like everybody else. you know, this has been an issue for 10 years. It causes people to be on one side of the fence, and they get emotional about it. And, you know, again, when you're dealing with all emotion, you're not making logical choices. You step back and look at this whole thing. Obama supported him before he became president. He talked all the right talk as the antithesis to everything that the Bush administration represented, and he's continued the policies and intensified them. He kind of really lets you know that these politicians, even the president, are really not in charge of the agenda, that the agendas are being driven by people that you don't see and that you don't hear, and that these politicians are administrators for a much larger picture that's going on.
Yeah. Here's the problem, Brown, is that when you start saying you supported Obama and he's continued his policies.
He's continued Bush policies.
Oh, he's well, yeah, okay, I'll give you that. But he's also continued many other policies. When you talk about the broader picture, I knew who Obama was because I researched him ever since he hit the stage. I read his books. I looked into his past.
I read his book, and anything that you looked into his past, he's effectively spoke it one way, and operated another once he became into office.
So you supported that?
Pardon me?
You supported that?
No.
That's what
I
you
had
just
no
said.
Idea.
You supported Obama.
No. Let me finish. Let me clarify.
Okay.
I had no idea what he was going to do until he came in office. Even his inauguration speech, it resonated with me because he spoke of transparency in government and doing things differently. And he's done things the same, plus more.
Else confused?
That's where I disagree with you, Mr. Brown. I believe the president kept one very important campaign promise, and that's he promised us that he would be the president to all of us, and he promised he would listen to all of us. And now look what the NSA's been doing. He kept that promise.
Yeah, right. He did that. And you know something? And the NSA and the Patriot Act, now what let me know that it was more of the same.
Yeah.
Because I know that he's a constitutional professor, which means he understands and knows the Constitution far better than I do. Okay? And he's continued for the Patriot Act to be in, and he's intensified it, and he also signed the NDAA.
When they say he's a constitutional professor, let's set the record straight on that. He taught one class on the 14th Amendment.
Which makes him a constitutional professor, okay?
Well, it makes
And I'm not trying to put you down, but all right. He understands the Constitution. You're nitpicking.
Well, no. I'm just saying that the Constitution is so broad that, you know, it what he specialized in doesn't necessarily give him expertise in all of it, and we're seeing.
It's safe to say that he knows everything that he's done, okay, and everything that he's allowed from the NSA, from the spying, from everything on, has been unconstitutional. Anybody should know that the Patriot Act is unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That the NDAA is unconstitutional.
I agree.
Anyone should know that.
I agree. I had
That just takes an open mind to see that it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, I agree.
And the Constitution is what it's about.
Yeah.
I guess I'm turning into a libertarian.
Yeah. Sooner or later, you've got to. Sooner or later,
it only makes good. It only makes good. That's my only protection that I have.
Yeah,
I'm switching a little bit, or I'm changing a little bit. You know, Ice-T said, you know, I don't really care about gun control. All I know is if you got a gun, I want a gun.
There you go. Yeah, and it's the only rights we were guaranteed was life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that the rule of law would try to guarantee that. And your rights end when they begin to step on my rights, and my rights end when I try to get an up on you.
Well, they've been stepped on as soon as the Patriot Act introduced it. People were driven into it. And you know, and now you have the media.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm talking about the corporate news station because I watch them all, CNN, Fox. I watch all of them. And the way that they've structured the conversation, particularly since the stuff, the new revelations about how intensive and PRISM and how intensive the NSA spying on American citizens is, they've structured the conversation not whether it's right or wrong or unconstitutional. They've structured the conversation where people are saying, "Well, how much of it should be allowed?"
I know, I know. It's letting the camel's nose into the tent.
It's really sad that people can't step back and take a look at things.
I'm sitting here, guys. You know, I what pisses me off about the whole situation is the fact that the media is driving the narrative. We know that there's a problem with the IRS. We know there's a problem with Benghazi. We know there's a problem with the food stamp fraud. We know all this, all right? But what do they want to talk about? Gay and lesbian marriage. They did this before, okay? They changed the subject so that we don't know or we don't think about what's important, okay?
When's the last time you heard about the IRS? Well, you get news on it, but there's so much news. I mean, there's so much news. There's so much information out there. How do you focus on any one thing?
You focus on what's important.
Okay? Look, just this year alone, look at some of the huge news stories that we have that totally consume us. And I don't care who you are. They're compelling stories. Even if you don't want to think about them, they're in your face, and you can't help yourself from watching it. From the Boston bombing, okay, to the kidnapping. I mean, not the kidnapping. The Ariel Castro in Cleveland, with the, you know, keeping the girls prisoners for 10 years. Uh-huh. What other stories have been really huge? The Newtown shootings. That was in the beginning of the year.
Uh-huh.
It's one after another.
But now, you heard about Newtown, you heard about Trayvon Martin. But you hear nothing about Chicago.
Well, it's spoken about, but it's used in a way. In fact, they used it as a.
Why is it not important to hear about Chicago? Because it's black people and brown people shooting each other. That's why.
You hear about it, but the way that it's come into the conversation is that this is the reason why people are afraid of Trayvon Martin. I forgot all about Trayvon Martin, which is the biggest divisive thing of all. You just see the comments on the internet.
Yeah.
People cannot discuss race without being sarcastic. People are incredibly defensive. There is no conversation. It's just rhetoric back and forth.
Well, you got individuals that don't want to be honest about race. They want to label certain things racist or not.
You know what, Brown? That's one great thing about this program is the fact that I'm not a racist, but there was a lot of stuff that I didn't understand about the black community and why they said certain things or did certain things or presented certain ideas. Once I started listening to this and listening to South Carolina, Alabama, a couple other people that come on here, I started understanding it. And I think it's the problem with race is nobody's willing to shut up and listen to the other side and really try to put the pieces together. And that's why I'm this show is a blessing for me because it gives me a broader perspective on what's going on.
No, I commend you guys. Everyone doesn't disagree, but you guys are fairly courteous, you know. You guys are courteous. And when you try to take some of the emotion out of it, and you can have a reasonable discussion. Even when things bother me, I just like want to try to hear someone out and just try to make some logical arguments. But they've driven a wedge in the conversation with race. It's just unbelievable. I mean, at the same time that you have everyone going after Paula Deen and stripping her, because she is an old-fashioned antebellum racist. I don't care what you say. But at the same time, it seems like the sensibility that, you know, the citizenship or the rights of black people are being exalted. At the same time, they're gutting the Voting Rights Act. Now, which is more important?
No, they are not gutting the Voting Rights Act. They're just requiring people to show daggone ID. That's all.
And that's designed to lower.
No. In the state of South Carolina,
Go ahead. Did you hear about the couple that they named their child Messiah?
And there's, as you find out, there's 600 or 700 people in the United States who have that name.
Why not? So why did the court make him change his name?
Because the judge was a jerk.
I mean, they put a bad name on Christian. Because you can't make somebody change their name because you don't like it, even though I thought it was a dumb name, don't get me wrong. But then I got folks that named North, Northwest, and then Million Dollar. I mean, and one guy's named his kid Mister.
What do you do? You know, if you take with that judge, what do you do with kids named Muhammad? What do you do with kids named Jesus? I mean,
but I can't,
the name.
But I can't believe he made them change their name.
Well, I hope they're appealing.
Somebody
wants to go appeal that thing. That's just, you know, this is what I'm talking about. You get people with cockamamie ideas. Let me tell you about people who are in politics. And I'm going to include myself in this, okay? You get different. You're going to get people who want to do and work for the common good. And good for them, they're few and far between. You've got people who need a way to make a living, and there's a lot of them. But mostly you get people who've got an axe to grind. And they get in there, they want to do good. They're do-gooders, and they do good this country right down the toilet, and you get jerks like that judge that came up with that decision. No, you're not.
I'm a do-gooder.
No, you're not.
I want good government.
No, the difference between you is, Tracy Hunt, you are a do-gooder. But the other half of the equation is they're do-gooders who think they're damn right all the time. And that's what you're not. You're willing to still listen and examine your beliefs.
And that,
they're not.
And that applies to everybody.
Well, not to me. I'm a nice guy.
Well, of course, because you're right.
Of course. There you go. You got it, Brown.
Hey, Brown, where are you from?
I'm from California, Los Angeles. I live in the Bay Area now. Go ahead.
You can be from. I was just out there, and I just wanted to make sure none of those people that I passed my card out to, because they started trying to pay me $100 a minute to go out and spew my ideals in Los Angeles Square on a microphone. See how long I last.
Oh,
Nancy Pelosi wants to make California a haven for undocumented immigrants.
Let her.
There's 33, 34 million people here, and yes, there's a lot, and the population of Hispanics and Latino people is huge. You know, you got to take the attitude to live and let live.
But can I say this? Let me throw this in here. I have a problem when I go to the store, and I don't speak Spanish. I mean, the most I can say is hello, goodbye, windows, and shoes.
Hey, the only thing I know in Spanish is what Speedy Gonzalez used to say, and I'm married to a Puerto Rican. So how bad is that?
See, you know,
well,
I got it bad.
Puerto Ricans are American.
So Tracy,
and Speedy can...
you could say hello, goodbye, windows, and shoes. So every person that meets you hands you a rag and says, "Okay, you wash enough of my windows, I'll give you those shoes."
Oh my goodness. Well, you want to know something?
But what I'm saying is, when I went into Walgreens the other day in Los Angeles, I had a very, very difficult. I was very, very upset about the young man not being able to explain to me my bill.
Uh-oh, mm-hmm. Here we go. Here we go.
I'm telling you, when you go from $2.99 to $4.80, I expect to have some kind of conversation about why I'm paying so much. And he could not explain it to me, and he did not speak English enough to explain what the heck was going on and why I was being charged so much. And I just think that's a disservice to the customers. I understand if you speak Spanish, I think that's great.
So is that his personal burden to carry, or is that the bigger picture of Walgreens gonna pay as least possible, gonna pay someone minimum wage, and you're going to get minimum wage type service people?
Well, let me tell you this. This is how I put it in my mind. There are a couple things that I found wrong with it. One, he was in the inner city of Los Angeles, which is still about 60-40, 70-30 black to Latino. Okay.
Where exactly were you?
I was on Crenshaw.
Okay.
Crenshaw. So it was about six. Crenshaw. It was on Crenshaw and Exposition. Crenshaw and Martin Luther King. So
right.
It's still a.
That's for the people that don't know. That's right where the people were having the Trayvon Martin when they were people are in the street. That's right where they're having the Trayvon Martin riot, so to speak.
Right.
Just
right
the other
there.
Day, right? Just to give people an idea. Yeah, that's still the black community, but
that, right. So there was the first thing that really got under my skin is one that he couldn't speak English. Secondly, everyone that was working in the store happened to be of Latin descent inside of a black neighborhood, and there was no black men that they could find to work that night shift. That bothered me. Third, he couldn't tell me anything about what I had bought. And that bothered me also.
Yeah, well, I guess you got recourse. You can call Walgreens corporate
I can call Walgreens corporate, but my problem is, and this is the issue that I have, is I don't mind him. I think it's good that he's working there and he's taking care of his family, and I think it's wonderful because he don't mind working at a minimum wage job to get to where he's going, and I think I applaud people that work hard,
right.
And even if you work for nothing, so I'm
yeah,
it's
but
not
if he,
his
but
fault.
But if he's not qualified and he's not effective in doing his job, he's not doing anybody any good.
But he might have been the only person they could find to work that night shift. Because you got to understand, a 24-hour Walgreens in the area that he's in is not the safest place in the world all the time.
No.
And so I have to applaud that service of dedication and work. But the other half is when I look at the unemployment rolls and I look at the African American male and where he sits on those rolls or he sits on those rolls.
Statistically, some of us do well, but go ahead.
But a whole bunch of us still don't want to work, and a lot of us can't pass a drug test if we do go to work, and that bothers me also. And so when I look at this and when I look at the Latino, because after I left, that was my first night there, and it was the middle of the night, so I got in late. But when I got done with all of this and I got done seeing who was working in California and Los Angeles, what they were doing and where they were, I saw a lot of black women working. I saw a lot of Latin men working. I saw a lot of Latin females working. But I tell you what I did not see working. I did not see African-American males working.
Where were they, Tracy?
I don't know.
Rolling down the street, smoking Indo, sipping on gin and juice.
They heard Tracy was in town. They were all hiding. They heard Tracy was in town. They were hiding.
You know
something?
They
heard you on the radio.
I watched Don Lemon on CNN.
Yeah.
And I watched him say some things that, and he gets attacked.
Yeah.
And I also noticed that when these conversations go on amongst black people, off the record or even in chat rooms or something where it's primarily black people,
uh-huh.
Yeah,
we don't seem to attack each other as much because there's some truth to it. But when someone like Don Lemon or even when Bill Cosby made my skin rise, and I think part of the problem is that when people, black people in particular, step outside of the box and condemn some of the pathologies that go on in our communities or go on among our people, particularly the younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say younger generation, let's just call it 30 and under. Some of the pathologies that exist, they're put down and they're castigated. Now, and there's some truth there. There's some truth there. Where we'll probably disagree is the causes and the reasons. I just noticed that if that conversation goes on in a closed setting where it's just black people, no one seems to get that uptight because we realize there's some truth there. But
well,
if
I'm
that conversation,
tell the truth. It has to happen because what's happening is we're having all these quiet conversations in the background. And our young people are still laying it waste. I heard my governor say that young children learn to read from 0 to 3rd grade, but by the 4th grade they read to learn. And if they don't learn to read, they will never read to learn. And our problem is how we are not forcing anyone. When we talked about rights, and I want to go back to that because we were talking about rights and who has the right to do what. Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. which means you must go do something to attain it. And you must work hard to attain it. And the liberties that you have
are... It all depends on what makes you happy.
Hold on. But see, whatever makes your boat float, but you can't make me... You shouldn't make me pay for your happiness because you don't want to go work for it. Because, see,
right.
Freedom is not free. And I go back to what I said about, you know, our veteran standing on the wall. Freedom is not free. You have to take responsibility for your own welfare when you are free. When you give your welfare over to someone else, you are now in servitude or enslaved, whether you like it or not. And right now we are breeding a generation, not just of black people, not just of poor people, but of most people who are willing to take everything for free but never going to work for anything. And that is a problem. And everybody's going to be a slave to the system if we're not careful.
There's some truth in that, and I've noticed that I'm 50, okay? My brother, a couple of years younger than me, I noticed that even his daughter, who recently graduated from the UC system and has traveled the world in her studies, even her, she wants to continue traveling and doesn't really see, you know, I was like, well, you know, eventually you're going to have to get a job and start earning some money. You know, you'll feel good about yourself. You can take it. She said, well, I can still get money from you and from him and from my grandparents. Now, this is someone that's graduated college on time. No, there's a lack of work ethic throughout people that in their 20s. This is a generation of people that are incredibly spoiled, that don't know how to wash dishes and do basic chores. I worked like a slave when I was a kid. I did all kinds of things. And, you know, my folks would tell me, you know, you're going to be happy one day that I taught you to do this. And I'm like, yeah, right, whatever, you know. Am I happy that I know how to do all this stuff now? Yeah.
But it came from hard work. But and that's what I'm saying. I think Not So Blind Mike, you know, he's blind. You cannot be a person who sits back on your laurels waiting for someone to take care of you. Because even if you have a child that's handicapped,
you know what?
If you don't
teach
that child,
are raised like that. You have the parents do everything for their children.
You can't do that.
It's being done.
But
it's
you shouldn't, because right now, what happens when you're no longer here?
Well, you know, I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more.
When you're no longer here, the government takes care of them, Tracy.
You guys continue on with this government. The government isn't taking care. If people are that, if they want that little out of life, it's sad.
They
don't know that there's more for them, and they don't want them
wants,
to know that there's more for them.
If someone wants that little out of life,
hey,
it's really sad.
You know what, Tracy? You should find that clip that Jeff played of the surfer guy from California who was getting $200. Play that for Brown. Brown, you'll fall off your seat.
Someone that's happy with a general relief check?
Holy cow, the guy was a surfer in California. He wanted to be a rock star. He was getting that card, what Tracy was calling the debit card. I forgot what that was called.
EBT.
But he was getting, yeah,
EBT.
That's it.
EBT. They call it eat better today.
Right. And this guy was happy.
I don't mean to be joining in with you guys, because I support the people and whatever the other. And you know what, something? And I would much rather feed people than bomb people.
I would rather teach people to feed themselves than feed them.
You know,
I thought
can
EBT stood for excuse my.
Here's a bigger
toil.
Picture. Now, you guys, I can agree with you, okay, in principle, but the bigger picture is we spend $70 billion, and that's increased. That's probably doubled over the past 5 or 6 years since the economic downturn. We spend $70 billion on whatever they call it, the SNAP program, food stamps, okay. But this same country spends $1 trillion on defense. We're building tanks that generals in the army saying, hey, we don't need any more tanks. They're building them anyway, the Abrams tanks. They're building submarines. They have submarine programs. And these submarines cost $63 million that we really just don't need.
You know what?
We do need them, sir.
We do need them.
How many submarines do you think we have?
Have you ever been on a submarine?
Yeah.
Many years ago at Disneyland.
That doesn't count.
Well, you got You got countries
well,
like
he
China
asked me. That's my
other
that's
countries
my
that have been, yeah, that's building their arsenals up. We need to stay modern.
Okay, you know what? I'm sorry. Let me interrupt for 1 second. And I've never personally, I'm not saying it hasn't been said, but personally, I've never heard any general say that we didn't need any more stuff. But what's the bigger problem? Our military,
I can find it online.
Go ahead and put it in the chat room. What's the bigger issue, or what's the bigger problem? Military big up, or the trillions upon trillions of dollars that we give in foreign aid all the time?
Can I bring up a topic that's just a little bit local, but kind of fits in over there? Did you see in the paper? We have a one of these quasi public corporations here called the Youngstown Neighborhood Development Corporation. These folks got a $780,000 grant from the federal government to do urban farming.
Right.
Now, that's not a new concept. They've been doing victory gardens since, you know, World War I.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And 700, and then they're going to build a communal kitchen. I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, now, we have something here in Youngstown called Second Harvest Food Bank, which is the clearinghouse for all of the food banks, you know, the food pantries that are in the multi-county area here. If the government were to give them $780,000, do you know how much food they could buy to actually feed people? Who's going to learn how to grow corn in the city?
They're not. Right on the corner there right now, they got sunflowers.
Yeah, they have. That is part of an overall $4.5 million grant coming from I don't know what's it's the agriculture thing, I think, that runs this program. I was stunned. I mean, these people, the Youngstown Neighborhood Development Corporation, are good people. They do good work. But geez, oh man, what? And they tried to dress it up and say, well, they're going to teach people how to take care of themselves.
People
how?
They're not going to garden.
They're not going to garden. I mean,
I've
got gardens
not,
all around
that's
me. I've
not
got
true that,
all
that people, that's not true that people won't garden. I know where they're urban gardens. I know where there are
okay,
urban gardens in
way.
Oakland. And you know what? It's a noble cause, and it's better to teach people and to spend money to teach people to grow food. They may need to. There may come a time where they need to in the future. I think it's a noble cause. I would much prefer to teach Americans here in America to learn how to grow food and become self-sustaining. Instead of, you know, building schools, instead of supporting the military-industrial complex and spending billions of dollars on weapons.
Let me put it to you like
that's
this.
That's my take.
Let me say it this way. I have no problem with me teaching you how to be a part of a garden group. But in the real world, if you live in this city, it's yes, you can learn how to plant some seeds. But if you don't know how to wash some clothes and fold them up, And let me say this. I was out while I was gone, and I'm going to take a break in a few minutes, and I'll turn the mics off. You guys go for it. But while I was out, I went to several people's homes, and they don't know how to fold sheets. They don't know how to fold towels. They don't know how to iron clothes. They don't know how to can. They don't know how to freeze. They don't know how to plan a meal. They don't know how to preserve a meal for after you've gotten it done. Nor do they know how to do their own hair and take care of their own stuff so that they don't have to spend the money that they don't have to live.
Wow, Tracy, that means they need to give me and Sticks and Mrs. Sticks a grant so we can go up there and teach them how to do all this stuff.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. And I don't have a problem with urban gardens. If you want to garden, learn how to garden, that's fine. But if you don't learn how to preserve that which you have, then all I've done is make some big cats, make a good check, spread some seeds out there to make it feel good, and give somebody some benefits. Because trust me, the people that are getting paid at these urban garden centers, most of them are not volunteering their time. The administration, because remember, a lot of times the money goes to the administration and not to the people. And we need to start teaching people common sense how to just do things and think. Because if you can't clean a house, if you don't know how to take care of your clothes, then that means you're always buying.
I if you go through some of the neighborhoods here in town, even some of these the homes were built by Habitat for Humanity, some of these other programs, you know, these homes are now boarded up. It's not that I have a problem with urban farming and gardening. My grandfather was a gardener. All my neighbors have gardens. I've got corn growing right in my backyard in the middle of the urban. That's great. It's just that $780,000 for that probably has minimal impact as opposed to doing something else with the money.
When I lost a button and I asked people, do they have a needle and thread? I think it's so sad when I go into your home and I ask you for a needle and a piece of thread and you don't have the black, the white, and some needles.
Wow.
You know what that means?
Yeah. They're not sewing.
Right. That means you're not sewing anything. So when things break, you I don't know what you do with your clothes. Because buttons pop whether you like it or not.
Yeah. I mean,
That's what I'm saying. So how do you survive without it? So listen, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. Hey, listen, 216, your mic is on. Everyone who's on the phone lines, all your mics are on. I'm going to take a break. Mark and I are going to sit here and chat for a minute. We'll be right back.
Hey, South Carolina.
Let's talk for a moment about a grant.
South Carolina.
Yes, sir.
Let's get us a grant for gardening. You work days, and I'll take the shift over when the sun goes down. It won't matter to me.
Hey, you guys, earlier you guys were talking about food stamps and stuff. And I remember, when I was growing up, my dad, he went about 6 months, sold his car. He was trying to get into real estate. Didn't have a car for a while, was living at his mom's. And I grew up and I admired that about him because he'll go without. And he'll go through the rough times to get what he wanted, you know. And he sold a house eventually. It took about 3 years, but he sold it. I hated helping him every Saturday morning. But when I got out and I started doing houses myself, back in like 2003, I was able to really know when somebody was trying to get over on me. Say, well, no, that's not how it works. So I think that apprenticeship has been lost in our generations to where people aren't really the younger generation. And it's not everybody's not going to flip houses or rent or do things business-wise, but having a trade, I think that's been lost. I think the community college is a viable option graduating high school. You don't
that's
have
true.
To have a super scholar. You don't have to have all these high GPA. You can go in with a 2.1 GPA and come out. You know, with a nice trade. And I know some people that cut hair. I know a girl that does hair. I mean, make real good money doing these things.
Yeah.
So I think that's been lost. And I think that $700,000 probably would have been better spent doing that than trying to, you know, do that.
Hey, Alabama, we had a WIA program down here.
Workforce Investment Act. Investment Act. That's what I joined. I joined that program. I actually was in that program for a while.
And what they did was, in collaboration with the local technical college, they were offering you go in as an electrician, a plumber, a welder, there was another one. But what they did was you go to school, they pay you $10 an hour for your school time, okay? Once you get out of school, they will help you do job placement, right? They had 180 slots. They only could fill 10 of them.
I look, we had a line around the corner for people.
And it's crazy. It was crazy down here.
But South Carolina, they're doing that with IT. You know, IT, you got jobs out here paying $120. I mean, you got people making a lot of money doing this stuff, $30, $40 an hour starting. I'm talking about no experience because there's demand for people. But nobody, a lot of people don't know. People don't, with a high school diploma. And people don't know about it.
They have more than a high school diploma. They probably have Microsoft certification.
No, that's what I'm saying.
What you said. They've got skills.
What I'm saying is this. You can graduate from high school. A lot of people don't know this. You could graduate from high school and get your CCNA, Certified Cisco Network Associate, or your Microsoft certification different, and you can go and get a job for $30 an hour, which is about 62 somewhere in there, which isn't bad. For someone with just a high school, it can be done. It's not impossible because
it's better than being on food stamps and having baby mamas. I agree.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I was on the program, but while I was on the program, this is what I was doing, what he's just – it's funny he brought up – when you said WIA, I knew right off the top what you were talking about, because when I found out about it, I don't believe in government. I'm more libertarian, but at the same time, if you're going to spend money, it should be spent like this.
Yep. Yep. But, you know, they I mean, they recruited hard in the town that I'm from, and they could not fill those slots. And the lady that was the administrator for it, she was just shaking her head. She had guys that would, you know, that were, you know, hanging out on the block, and she all but, you know, tried to beg them, but they still would not participate. And it was sad.
That is
so.
How long ago was that, South Carolina?
This was about 4 years ago.
4 years ago. See, yep. 4 years ago, I'd have taken one of those jobs. That was just after the guy ripped us off and wiped us out of everything we had worked for 30 years. I'd have been glad to start there.
Yep.
Sometimes having
okay,
a trade is
I'm
the best
I'm
thing to have.
I'm going to have to mute my mic for a second, guys.
Okay.
Right.
So, sometimes having a trade is the best. I mean, true enough, I mean, a lot of times
sure.
you want to get to where you don't have to work with your hands.
Yeah.
But sometimes that is the most secure. Because I don't care what the economy does, I'm going to always get a haircut.
Exactly.
I'm not going to walk around here looking like a
well,
fool.
I've always said that even in my situation, being blind, you know, the trades I worked in. A whole bunch of stuff can go wrong in my life, but I always know I can at least buy groceries next week with skills that I have in my own two hands. I'll go work for $3 an hour if I have to, and I'll go build someone a deck or repair their roof or do whatever I have to do like I used to do.
All of you guys are over 35, I assume?
I'm 64.
Okay.
I'm barely over 35. Don't do me like that.
No. I think this work ethic and the ability. I was talking about it with a friend of mine who's a few years younger than me yesterday about how even though we had parents that had, you know, it was a middle class upbringing, there were things that our parents just weren't going to buy for us.
Mm-hmm.
The fancier
yeah.
sneaker or this clothes or that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was particularly clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And we also talked about going to school. We talked about going to school, and if you didn't have the right stuff on or if you had the knockoff stuff on, that you caught hell,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Oh, my dad would buy stuff for my sister, but he wouldn't buy it for me. And
all
he
right,
would tell me it's because I'm a guy, because I'm a man. I'm going to have to take care of family.
I can't do it for you.
I
understand that thinking. You're going to have to get out and get it. Hopefully she's going to find someone to take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
I get
it. You're going to hand her off from daddy to husband.
I don't have children, but I get it. I would spoil the daughter so that they would expect that from a man, to find the right kind of man to,
mm-hmm.
that's going to provide. And as far as if I had boys, I would, you know, I don't know what to tell you. God bless the child that has his own. You're going to have to find a way.
Mm-hmm.
But in talking about that, we wanted to work
mm-hmm.
at 15 years old, at 14 years old, as soon as we could work. I remember hustling. We lived in a townhouse complex. I would wash all of the neighbors' cars. I would get up on Saturday and wash everybody's car. And this is in the 70s. And I'd go knock on their door and tell them, by the way, I washed your car. And I'd get a quarter or I'd get 50 cents. It got to the point where I was washing people's car that wasn't even dirty, you know, but and they stopped me. But I took the... You know, I was like, wow, maybe I washed their car on Saturday and say, I washed your car again. But, you know, they curtailed me and they appreciate getting their car washed. These younger folks today, okay, they don't seem to know how to do anything. And I'm talking about anything.
Mm-hmm.
From washing a dish to mopping a floor to cleaning a bathroom. Just the stuff that you have to do to be self-sufficient.
Well, you know what, Mr. Brown?
We've run tests on this with these kids because I've worked in a number of trades. The kids today, when they look at a car, they don't see pieces. Alabama, you look at something and you see the nuts and bolts and you see the hinges and you see the separate pieces. They don't. They see it as a car, as an entity. The thought of taking a wrench or a screwdriver to any part of it is frightening to them because they don't see it as individual components that you can mess with. They see it as a car.
And you know what? Like Brown was saying, that's because of their upbringing. Like Brown, grew up in a middle class family, but
it didn't give you everything.
They gave him and myself responsible parenting. They said, "Listen, you don't get nothing for free," and that's what you're talking about with the car.
Well, they're teaching you the way the world is.
Exactly.
You don't like it, when you're a kid, because it seems like other kids are getting things that you're not.
My dad, I remember his transmission or motor would break. He would take a Saturday, have me sitting squatting down, handing him the screwdriver and the wrench. He would rebuild his motor, go buy the parts, rebuild it, and be back to work on Monday. I can't find a kid under 25 right now that I don't know anybody. I can't do that. I can drop a motor, but I can't do all that stuff he could do. And I hate I didn't learn as much as I could from him before he passed away, but that's a special generation of guys that could drop motors, that could he'd do it without a book. He'd just go to the junkyard, pull his parts, rebuild it, and the car be riding in about one day. I mean, that's just old school right there.
Yep.
So you can't find that. That's rare. Now, that's a gift. I would love to be able to know how to – I dropped the transmission when I was in junior college, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy because I replaced it when it broke when I was doing this thing down in Florida one time, and we got stranded. I went and dropped it, and it wasn't – I mean, it took me about an hour and a half, but they looked at me like I did something crazy. Like, how did you do that? I was like –
I don't know how to do a lot of those things, and that's kind of by choice, because I developed other skills that I always thought would be able
now
to earn me enough money. Well, the lady's back.
Go ahead. I'm Tracy.
Hi, Tracy. I'm Brown Beasley. No, we were.
Hi, Brown Beasley.
We were way off topic.
That's all right. Go off. It's open mic. You can go way off topic. What you guys talking about?
I mentioned, and one of the gentlemen said that there's been studies that proven this, that the younger generation, and I'm talking about 25 and under, okay, just really doesn't know how to do anything. From basic taking care of house maintenance to working on a car, the way they picture a car, this is a screwed up generation. I don't see initiative. I don't see wanting to work for something.
You know why?
There's a.
You know why?
I mean, there's a lot of. I'm sure. Else, I'm sure.
Do you
know?
Do you really want to? I can tell you why. Because remember, this is Know It All Thursday. I can tell you why. We have given them too much.
They're spoiled.
That's why. If you want to know why, see, when we were growing up, if you wanted to go somewhere. Mom did not drive you. If you did not have a bike, if you tore up the bike, it was called legs. You walked it. And if the bike got stolen, you had legs. You could take your bike. If you didn't come home on time, you didn't go next week.
You know what?
If you didn't get good grades, you didn't play football.
Let me add this, too. Society as a whole, the way things are running in this country, add to it. For instance, I have a roof I have to replace on my house. I know how to do roofs, but here's the problem. If I were to pay somebody to come out and do it, it's going to cost me about $10,000. Here's the problem. My insurance company, if I get any leaks in this roof or if anything happens, even though I know how to do it, I used to roof, but if I don't pay somebody, a professional, quote-unquote, to do it, then my insurance company will not cover the cost if anything goes wrong with that roof.
Wow.
Can we say racket?
I can say that.
Okay. The number is 347-945-5229. Our society, we have made it into a society that we do not want anyone to do anything for themselves. And so you wonder why the generation is the way that they are is because we've made them that way. We reward bad behavior. Mr. Beasley, I'm sorry, I don't know you, but I tell you this. When I was younger.
No, I'm agreeing with you. And
No, I'm talking about you. I'm talking about when I was younger, if I met you on the side of the road, no matter what I thought about you, if I didn't like you, as a matter of fact, if my mother didn't like you, I still could not come outside of my house and disrespect you openly and or behind closed doors. Because if it ever got back to my mom, even though she did not like you, she thought you were the worst person in the world. If it ever got back to her.
Because
that I disrespected you. If you were an adult and I was a child and she did not like you, she was vehemently against everything you did. But if it ever got back that I disrespected you in any way, shape, or form, going home would be a nightmare for me.
And there's something there too. You know, I'm a man of a certain age now. And I even have family members, younger cousins, and nieces and nephews. And part of it's my fault when you try, you know, I didn't know when they first were born that you couldn't be their best friend, you know, that you couldn't be their pal with them, that you have to, you know, I'm the adult, you're the child. Other than that, they're going to take liberties with you, and they'll be disrespectful, and they'll do things that you were punished for doing, you know, or that you wouldn't have even, I wouldn't have even thought to do some of the things, you know, some of the things that they've said, and I wouldn't have even have thought to do some of the things because just that, there's not the respect for adults. My God, you guys are, I'm sounding like a conservative.
Listen, conservatives.
You know what I like
to
say? I have an open mind. I'm not going to disagree with the truth. And there's some things that you learn as you get older, and you see them missing today, and you look at why these younger generations in the state that they're in, and some of this stuff makes sense. It's true.
I don't mind if you believe in a liberal agenda. That's your business. That's what makes America great. We can agree to disagree as long as we're respectful in our disagreement.
Yeah, well, that doesn't happen because people get emotional and angry about stuff.
But it doesn't matter. You have to be respectful because respect is the door to open communication. And this is what's wrong with our Congress. This is what's wrong with our system. If you tell me that the walls in my room are white, then they're white. And I shouldn't try to tell you that they're cream when I know that they're white just because you're of another political party. And what's going on in our government system is we are not allowing people to get their right things in and us finding out that we're wrong in our process. You know, it's okay for a liberal to be right or a Democrat to be right. It's okay for a Republican to be wrong. It's okay for that and for us to come to a common agreement. The problem is we're not doing that.
Oh,
and
no,
we're getting wacky laws like the Affordable Health Care Act instead of just doing the right thing for America at large.
Which would be what? Leave it the way
the
that
right
it
thing
was?
Is to make, no, the right thing is to make sure that everyone has access to affordable health care. That was Republicans should have done it when they were there, and they didn't. And so they can't get mad because somebody else did it. But the law that was given was just a bad piece of legislation.
Well, it's a compromised piece of legislation. When you have a Congress and a Senate, when you have a Congress and a Senate that's all lobbied by the healthcare industry, what do you expect to get?
But the problem is they actually wrote the bill, and the bill is bad. And so now the people of America are going to have to pay for bad legislation, and they've tied it to your taxes, and they've tied it to your welfare, which makes absolutely no sense. And we have sat on the sidelines and told them, okay. But then I also have a problem with the guaranteed pension fund for senior citizens or people who are retired and General Motors. When General Motors and Chrysler went bankrupt and all those people got kicked off the rolls, what they did was they took a lot of senior citizens and made them have to go out and start shopping for the supplemental health care, and they were not prepared for it. And they allowed General Motors to renege on a contract that they were supposed to have to fulfill. That's not right. You don't do that to people, and that's where America goes wrong. Yes, we should have affordable health care, and everyone should have access to it. But you don't go and throw the baby out with the dishwater just because the dishwater got dirty. Take the baby out of the pan.
Well, you've got huge multinational corporations that drive all that their agenda is more important than the overall good, the general good
but
of the
whose
people.
Whose fault
but,
is that?
But let me, yeah,
whose
he's
fault
right.
is that? Whose fault
yeah.
is that? I don't know who to blame it to. That's the nature of a multinational corporation is a profit.
No. Because see, the Constitution don't say we the corporation. The Constitution says we the people. And because we have allowed somebody to hijack our home and our way of life,
The hijacking goes back many decades.
But why?
Have you heard of repo?
Go ahead. Tell me what repo is. I'm assuming that's an acronym for something.
No, repo means if you buy a car.
Oh, okay.
And you don't pay the car note.
I know what repossession is. Yeah.
That means I'm gonna come and take my car back from you.
I understand that.
So since you have hijacked my house and my liberties, I'm going to come back and repossess my freedoms and take it back from you and not allow you to walk all over me again. It's like a battered wife. I'm no longer going to allow you to beat me up next week. I'm leaving,
Tracy,
and I'm taking my kids with me.
I still have to say, and believe me, I understand that there's evil corporations, and I say this all the time, and I don't care if they're multinational or not, but whatever force that they have in the United States, you have to look at who's giving them the power. They don't have the power by themselves. If the rule of law in the Constitution was enforced the way it's supposed to be, then these
yes, they have the power, and I'll tell you why.
No, they do not, because
yes,
they're given the power.
Hold on, one at a time.
They are given the power by the United States government and the bureaucrats that we put into office that make these deals for them to be allowed to go forward with their agenda. The
What causes someone to be elected? Generally, it's money. 96% of the people that raise more money in any election is generally the winner.
No.
It's in the 90th percentile.
No.
Whoever raises the most money.
No. No, no, no. It used to be. Now, whichever party.
Why do you guys learn not to doubt me when I say something, because I generally I'm not just making.
Listen to what I'm saying. I play in this too often. And in my area, we can come in here and we can spend three times more as a Republican. We can spend four times more than our counterpart. And our counterpart
All right. In your area, you're part of the 4%. Okay.
But what I'm saying, listen, on national elections, the presidential election, you are correct. But when you look at your congressional elections and the things that are more local, it goes by the party of governing rule. And very, 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 very few municipalities now have balanced government rule. Am I wrong, Mark?
Nope, they're all pretty much one-sided.
It's either Republican or Democrat. So that's why you have safe seats across the country. And all these congressional safe seats that you see, that's why you see only
incumbents also have an advantage.
Usually a part of the party of rule. If you're a Republican and in your Republican safe district, no matter what you do, you're going to get back in. As long as you don't get caught taking pictures and put them on Facebook.
He was a Democrat, or you're not tapping your foot in the bathroom looking for a little quickie with a boy. Let's call it fair.
I was being fair. I wasn't talking about the.
No, I know. I'm kind of making a joke.
Sexual deviancy
among politicians has been proven to be systemic, whether you're Democrat or Republican. There's some vile, repulsive.
They do
them
all.
Vile, repulsive weirdos that look normal.
And they get elected.
Right. There's some vile, repulsive weirdos that do some weird ass stuff.
And they do it all the time. And the problem is that we never do the research on our candidates. That's why Barack Obama was elected. That's why George Bush was elected. That's why most of these presidents or congressmen or senators were elected. Because regular American citizen is willing to do the research. They just stick to their political philosophy, and that's it.
They don't have to research. I think Clinton being impeached and having a 75% to 80% approval rating lets you know that most people feel that someone's sex life is probably off limits. You know,
it is until you mess with a little kid. Until you mess with a little kid.
Maybe someone's sex life that there's more important things than what someone's doing behind closed doors.
But this is the issue. I don't care about your sex life. What you do within the privacy of your room is your business. But what I'm saying is, we have people who are elected. And no matter what decisions that they make, they can put together bad law. But because of the dynamics of their local position and their party of their local position, they continue
to
get reelected.
Which brings me to the bigger point that I was making is that money controls these elections. Okay?
But it's not money.
Money is the driving force. And corporations have the money, and they have the lobbyists. And they spend money, whether it be banking or pharmaceutical or oil, that their agenda is being pushed. That's what I'm saying.
But the people are voting. And the problem is people are undereducated.
You're right. And the people are voting for someone who who is at mercy of these lobbyists and these big corporations.
But they're not at mercy. Go ahead.
They are.
No,
they are.
How
come no one ever speaks out? No one in Congress ever speaks out and says this. Let me finish my sentence. No one ever comes and speaks out and says, you know what? Israel is wrong. What Israel did this time was wrong.
Why don't they say it?
Because the lobby is so strong.
That's not why they don't say it.
The lobby is so strong. The pro-Israel
lobby. That's not why they don't say it.
That's not why they don't say it.
It's not about the lobby. Listen to what I'm saying.
At the end of the day, the politicians are self-serving and they're more concerned with continuing to be elected.
Listening to what I'm saying. It's not what you're thinking. You think it's about money coming through them. What I'm telling you is it's about their contingency there inside of the House when they go against the rules, the unwritten rules. It's like the blue codes or the red codes in the Marines or in the Navy or in the whatever. You can't go against your own faction because what will happen is your family will come back and then devour you. It's like the mafia. You don't have to worry about your enemies across the street. You got to worry about your own house going against them. They're the ones who will come after you and your seat because if they don't support you, you won't come back in. It has absolutely nothing to do with outsiders. Yes, Mark?
The outsiders are inside.
Hold on.
Which leads me to a gentleman I saw on I think it was O'Reilly last week or this a couple of days ago we're very close to for the states calling for a constitutional convention right now. We're about two or three states shy of that happening. And I think what they need to do is to go to term limits. And I think that takes care of a whole lot of ills and will free up a whole lot of people to do what they want. It will decrease the importance of lobbyists and money, will allow the people there to vote their mind as opposed to vote what their party chairman says, their chairman has to say in the House or the Senate. And I think that's the single biggest thing we can do to help fix the system in the country. There's no reason for a senator to be there more than 12 years. I didn't vote for Harry Reid, and here's a guy that wields so much influence and affects me and my life, and I'm sick of looking at him. And there's no reason for a person in the House to be there for more than 8 or 10 years. I don't want to hear about seniority anymore. That's a crock. Seniority means the whack jobs and the safe districts rise to the top. You're looking at Nancy Pelosi. You're looking at Harry Reid. And you go over to the Senate. The Republican Speaker of the House is, I'm sorry, I like Congressman Boehner. He's a nice guy, but ineffective. It's time for these people to go. And the only way you're going to do it is to term limit them out.
But again, look at what I'm saying. You can't.
That won't happen. That's against their own interests.
There's two ways it could be done under the Constitution. It could be initiated in the legislature. But if you have 2/3 of the states that demand a constitutional convention, there's going to be a constitutional convention. And in my understanding, listening to the folks, I've been reading it online, there's about 2 or 3 states short of demanding a constitutional convention, in which case all hell's going to break loose, and it's about time to get these people in Washington scared so they do the right thing. And if anything's going to scare them, it's a constitutional convention that they can't control.
And I mean, you have to realize these guys have some of the best jobs in the world, and we keep on looking at, their corporation. The reason why the corporation is because corporations are leading the leadership, not necessarily the body of Congress.
Yeah.
What
are you talking about? Corporations have the money and the finance.
Right.
Yeah, we have the rule of law behind the way this country is supposed to be run.
Right, and it's been circumvented.
Circumvented by the people elected to office that allow it to go forward.
Whomever's been circumvented by, it's been circumvented. You have a plutocracy.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
But these are the people that are in office. These are in people that are in elected office, whether it's bought off or not. It's elected office, and corporations couldn't get away with anything if the rules of this country, the way they were supposed to be followed, went forward.
And,
well,
not, and like
has,
I said, and like
well,
I said,
it's,
you,
it's been,
hi, when
it's
you
been
look,
hijacked.
But Mr. Brown, listen to what I'm saying. When you
I'll
look at the when you look at the appropriate the appropriations committee and the Ways and Means Committee, and you look at all these people who are sitting a part of those committees that are a part of your Congress and a part of your Senate. You are when you look at your average Joe congressman. That congressman, unless he is a part of the infrastructure or the ruling part of the Congress, he's just going there and trying to get a couple bills and amendments attached to a couple of things that are big. But
well,
you don't have a whole.
What he's supposed to be doing is looking out for his district, for his area.
Listen to what I'm saying. In looking out for his district, if I am a congresswoman and Mark is a congressman and I'm from one district and he's from another, I've got to see if I can hitch my bill to his horse. But for me to hitch my bill to his horse, I've got to compromise. But the day that he no longer likes me and the speaker no longer respects me because he couldn't count on my vote is the day that I no longer get anything else passed for my district. That's how it works. And if I go against, and if I'm a weak small little congressional district in Ohio, and I go against my party structure, I promise you, in 2 years when we go to vote again, they will make sure that I no longer stay there. And I'm not talking about the opposite party. I'm talking about
Hold
my
on a
own.
Second. Now, that's where you have a disconnect, okay? In 2 years, all right, in 2 years when you're running for office, these other congressmen, these other party members that have feel betrayed by you not marching the party line, they don't have the ability to elect you or not elect you. They're
Correct.
Not voting in your district.
But what they
and
do
they also,
is...
And they also don't lend funds, and they also don't give funds or create an opposition candidate.
Yes, they do.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yes, they do. Not only do they do that,
do
but when reapportionment comes along,
so where do they get the
hold
funds
on.
From?
Let's go. They come out of. No, listen. I can as a congressman. I can write a check to Mark for his district if I'm unopposed and if I'm in a
okay.
safe district. So I can
right.
be
well,
safe as I want to be.
Well, let me
if
ask
I'm,
you.
Hold
let
on.
Me ask
let me
this.
Finish. If
where
I'm unopposed,
come from?
They come from other districts. They come from other people.
But
they
where
come,
do they initially come from?
They just come.
Who are
and
the largest contributors to elections?
That's the that you're
talking
well,
about.
Anybody, you're talking
anybody who contributes to your political party, sir. I urge you to look at Dennis Kucinich. Look at what happened to him, even though he went for Obamacare, but he was against it for a very long time until he got taken for a ride on Air Force One, but he was still against it. Look at what happened to him when he spoke out against his party. His party redistricted the
area. They cut him out of his own district. Not only that, go down to Allen West.
That's politics. That's what
no,
happened.
No, baby. You said, but you were talking about.
And I agree with what you're, I'm not denying.
That wasn't his own
party.
That was Republicans.
I'm just
it was Republicans
the,
that did that. Yeah. It wasn't Kucinich's
yeah,
part.
They all do it. They all do it. It's
no,
a dirty game.
But
Kucinich
was Republicans.
Game.
Republicans. But let me say this. Let's go down to Allen West down in Florida. Republicans cut him out of his own district.
Good grief.
Which for
well,
the life
a lunatic.
Of me, I'll never understand.
He's a self-hating Uncle Ruckus.
But listen, you can call him whatever you want. Remember, his
That's
ruckus was
is.
On the – hold on. You missed the point. His ruckus was on this – on that side of the aisle. So why did Republicans cut him out of his own district? It'd be different if Democrats cut him out of the district, Republicans cutting him out of the district.
Is he a – he's a Republican, right?
Right.
Yes.
So Republicans cut him out of the district. So who actually cut him out of – let's go to Maxine Waters. Republicans did not go after her with ethics charges. Democrats did that to have no finding. Again, we look at corporations like demons in the room, but you have to understand it's bigger than that. Yes, for presidential elections,
not,
you get all those –
There's nothing bigger than corporations. There's nothing bigger than corporations. That's what you don't understand.
Oh, yeah, there is.
I'm a corporation.
There's nothing
yeah,
more
is.
Powerful and bigger than corporations.
Do
There's
corporations
nothing and bigger than more powerful
laws?
Than banks. That's
Do
what controls everything.
Laws?
No.
The corporations write bills. Are they the ones putting pen to paper writing bills?
Absolutely.
Oh,
are
they
so many people that you have so many people, elected people, you have so many elected people that go from the private sector to the public sector to the private sector to the public sector. The people that were advising Mac Baucus, the guy who originally put forth a health care bill, his advisors were people that worked for, what's it called, HealthPoint? I believe that's the largest company. His advisors, his assistants.
You're lobbyists. Listen to what I'm saying. You're right about the lobbyists.
His hired assistants that are paid for out of his staff, they work for HealthPoint.
Like
you
said, listen, you are right.
Officials.
No.
All right, we can just agree to disagree, but I would implore all of you who think that I don't know what I'm talking about, that I'm off base, just to look into things a little bit deeper. Because I believe money controls everything.
And what I'm trying to say is something that I know. What I'm saying is you are right about corporate dollars and they're a lobbyist, but the lobbyists come from a different way, but your elections are coming from a different way. So what I'm saying is
if a local politician can't print up signs, if he can't hire
those monies do not come from big business. They could care less about those people. No, they don't.
Yes, they do. Well,
no,
let's find
they don't.
Out. Let's go find our. Let's ask our good
campaign.
Google.
Everything is disclosed. Those monies do not come from corporations. Corporations cannot give money to local candidates. It's not allowed. What they do is local monies come in for operations. Corporations are not allowed to finance candidates in any way, shape, or form. I know that for a fact across the board.
They can give to super PACs.
They can give we just started the super PAC thing.
Yeah.
But how can Goldman Sachs give millions of dollars to both Romney and Obama's campaign if corporations can't finance elections?
They have their own. They're called super PACs. They give to the super PACs, and the PACs can in turn give to.
Those with no limit. Now, for a law like that to get passed and upheld by the Supreme Court, if that doesn't tell you that money is a major factor in elections, nothing does.
Just so that law wasn't passed. That law, it isn't a law. It's a court decision, which came from the Supreme Court that overturned McCain-Feingold finance reform bill, and which was the single most unconstitutional piece of legislation I've seen in this country in my lifetime, where they tried to limit donations, when they tried to limit people running against incumbents from running political ads against them 90 days before the election. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Well, the Supreme Court overthrew it. And in the process of overthrew it, they said the corporations have the right to form super PACs. This is a creation of the Supreme Court, not the legislature. They came up with this. And so corporations can give to super PACs, and the PACs in turn give to the candidates.
Don't you feel that's dangerous?
You know, I've been in politics long enough to know there's lots of ways to get around things. Now, whether you increase the salary of one of your employees and you get 10 employees out to make personal donations to the candidate, sooner or later, there's always a way to get the money in. And it's a lot of money. It's not a little bit of money.
Feel that's dangerous?
You know, I'm torn. I don't like it, but I can't see how it can function without it.
Because if you don't
that totally marginalizes one man, one vote?
No.
But the problem, listen, if you do not finance a campaign, you will have a mess on your hands because Americans do not give to candidates as they should.
Nor do they get involved. Tracy and I, you know, we've been involved in stuff a long, long time. I can give you a litany of things that I see that are just absolutely, you know, horrible. I can tell you that there's just no other way it can be done. And you can complain about it. You've got two choices. You can complain about it and do nothing, or you can get active and participate in it and try to do what you can. And I have chosen the latter way. I'm not a rich person. I know there's fundraisers going around here, and believe me, I'm running one of them myself in about 6 weeks. There's fundraisers going on here for all sorts of people at all levels of income, and you know it is.
You're proving my point. How important money is and moneyed interest.
But you have to understand, if you don't have money, you cannot run a campaign.
No.
Because Tracy and friends, if you come here and you want to run an ad.
If you don't have food, eventually you'll become malnourished and die. If you have too much food.
You won't like what takes its place.
Right.
Think about this. You could do things in smaller countries than the United States. We have 335 million people in this country. In our district, Tracy and I live in the 6th district. Tracy doesn't. But the 6th Ohio district is a district that runs from Youngstown, which is in northeast Ohio, all the way down along the Ohio River to Cincinnati. Hundreds of miles. You can't campaign in that district. There's 5 media markets in that district. It takes a lot of money to run in that district. You're not going to go into the center of the square and stand on a soapbox and give a speech. Those days are over.
I lived in Cincinnati for a year. They're politically an interesting people. They remind me of some of the people in Arizona.
Yeah, but see, we are. I mean, if you really look at, I mean, there's no way that you can't come to me and say, Tracy, run my ad. But then if I like you, then I'll run it for free. But if I don't like you, then you got to pay.
And the media companies jack the rates up.
Oh yeah.
When the politicians come. It's a vicious circle, and believe me, there's lots of people at all levels feeding at that trough. So it's just not a matter of saying you don't want big donors going into the big candidates, because there's a lot of people whose hands out are in that pie, some of which, you know, aren't so nice.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Joe Representative X, okay? Representative X is elected, and he's taking money from, let's just say, the tobacco lobby, okay? Mm. A bill comes up that wants to somehow impede and restrict the tobacco lobby's against it, okay?
I'm doing one of those right now, by the way. Just so you know, we're trying to push a bill through in Ohio to benefit our area where we live that involves the tobacco lobby. So
there's a lot of people when I was in Cincinnati for a year, there was a lot of people smoked.
Right.
A whole lot of people seemed, well, it's right by Kentucky too. Cincinnati's right across the border, and Kentucky's a tobacco state. At any rate, so let's just say Representative X said, you know something? It makes sense that we should try to restrict the, you know, tobacco use among youth, that it's an addictive drug and it causes all kinds of health problems down the line. You know, I'm going to have to support this. So the tobacco lobby, the tobacco people, okay, their representative comes, hey, you know, now, do they bite the hand that feeds them? More often than not, they don't. More often than not, they don't. Okay.
But listen to what I'm saying.
They bite the hand that
you are looking at this as most people do, and I did also. So I'm not. This is not a slight against you. But you think that they are writing them a check to their campaign and from that tobacco lobby. That's not how this works.
Especially in Ohio, we
don't do that.
Not for our state candidates.
That's just not how it works. It looks like it would work.
Representative X that I was talking about is a U.S. congressman.
Right. Okay. And X does not get a check written like you read it. The lobbyist actually has control has the ear to many, many PACs. These PACs begin to bring me around and introduce me and put me into circles that
and
they can help
and
fund
these
my.
PACs are designed, these are political action committees that they represent a certain agenda or a certain
Correct.
Stance on a law.
And everybody
on,
is a part,
on a proposed
everyone
law.
Is a
they
part
a
of a PAC. And everyone that you know of is a part of a PAC, whether you know it or not. Most of us don't even realize that we are giving PAC money. When we go shopping certain places, when we do certain things, you'd be surprised what you are contributing to that you don't know that you're contributing to.
Well, Tracy, just to add into the conversation, just to add into the conversation, I agree with Brown in that when you really look at it, a lot of politicians, family members, are on the board of trustees or over these different corporations, and they're never there. And they may be getting paid $300,000-$400,000 a year. Nancy Pelosi's husband got a $785 million contract, something like that. There are ways around, like you're saying. What's the other guy that's in the studio with you? There are ways around, and I think that's what they do. They find ways to cheat and steal. That's what they
one
do.
Hand,
they
split, one hand washes the other.
Yeah, they're splitting that money up in Washington, and they're putting it.
Which is the root of the corruption.
And I'm going to tell you why. Let me answer this a couple of different ways. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the PAC. Now, I'm representing a group of people here in the Mahoning Valley that are attempting to do something that would be adverse to the tobacco lobby. And so we know we talk to a lobbyist. We know who the tobacco lobby is. We know who the people are involved with the tobacco lobby. And so what do? We form our own PAC, and we go out and we raise money in order to bring forward our point of view. And it's a really interesting vehicle, and it's available to anyone that's got $50 to send down to the state of Ohio to get to get a registration number. You've got to follow what the rules are for disclosure.
And that those people
have
access to people with money. You know what? I appreciate you for really illustrating my point.
We go to the point of it is that individually we couldn't get what we want. Together we can. And there's a group of about 20 of us that are working
so
very
much.
Hard to go to the people with money. You're
illustrating it better than I ever could.
No, but
there's
no other way to do it. It can't work any other way.
Well.
I mean, it's really nice to say,
in California, there are other ways.
Let me ask you guys a question. So you're telling me that, during the election, Obama got like $50 million from all these different foreign countries. Mickey Mouse in Dubai, there's somebody named Mickey Mouse donated $10,000. Different stuff that happens. I'm saying these companies can go over through and work through that particular process and send money through another way. They can work around, but they can send millions of dollars. And for every time they do that, you got to go get 150,000 people to come get $10 just to compete with that. And that may not happen.
I agree, but I'm going to tell you what. I don't blame politicians are going to do what politicians are going to do. It's supposed to be watching the politicians?
The people?
The people in the press, and they're not.
How do they have a chance?
Everything is disclosed. The problem is your medium and that we have allowed. We allowed a bunch of people in Congress to collude our media to where it's no longer about facts. It's about talking heads and special interests.
Now, I'm going to talk about a little bit about
for those that are manipulated
There was an article in the New York Times yesterday.
What is your name, by the way?
About Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. Now, that was a small article in the New York Times. And they talked about the corruption in the Clinton and the mismanagement of the Clinton Foundation, and Hillary's an active participation in it. Do you think for one minute that NBC News is going to cover that story?
No.
CBS, no. ABC, no. CNN, no. And if you want, and this is where the problem is. You want to know where the influence is? You want to know where the real power is? CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN. And the New York Times and the Washington Post. That's where the power is in this country.
What are those? Those are all huge media corporations, and
right.
They're even larger than that. They're larger than that. When you take a company like NBC, it's owned by Comcast, which owns Universal Studio, which owns Universal Pictures. These are big, huge.
So where did it come from?
Agendas. Pardon me?
Where did it come from?
Where did what come from?
How did this happen?
Well, it's happened
telecommunications,
a lot.
The Telecommunications Act of 1996, which was both Republican and Democrat inspired.
Right. Well, I think the gentleman is illustrating how important money is when it comes to getting agendas or getting your idea, even from the – and now he says it's open to, you know, smaller individuals. If he thinks that he can raise or if he – maybe he knows people that have the wherewithal of these huge corporations.
It's not about huge corporations. It's
no,
really, really
yes,
not.
Yes, it is, because
no,
they have the
you're
most
not,
money.
Sweetheart,
they have
you're
the
not
most
listening.
Money.
It's not about
I am listening, and what I'm hearing him say.
I'm saying to you
listen to what I'm saying.
Everybody keeps on saying these huge corporations. The huge corporations do what they do. You cannot fight Walmart. But I will say this. It's about a whole bunch of small corporations that understand how to make things happen that can pull a lot of money out of a small area just because they can. See, it's not about how big your pond is. It's about knowing what to do with the pond you're in. And I watch people
I disagree because
I know you do.
Because when it
but
comes
what I'm
down,
trying to tell you is I'm watching people pull money out of a broke town in the tunes of hundreds of thousands of dollars in one night.
And we're not going to go into how
and
that
I'm not
happened.
Going
we're
and
not
I'm
going
not
going
to go into who,
it,
what,
yeah.
when, and what, but I'm watching it happen
it happened live,
and then it's not Memorex. I'm like, whoa, this is serious. I'm watching this happen, and guess what? You
I'm
can
not,
do
I
the same
know.
Thing, too, if you know how to do it.
Here, this is the message I'm trying to get out. You can sit and complain about the way it is. From now to the cows come home, you're never going to change it. What you can do is go out and participate in the process. Learn how it works. Know what to look for. And you know what? It's hard.
I would prefer to spend my time working and earning income instead of – and there's no issue that's really that important to me.
It will be when your income –
all I'm saying is this. I prefer to be responsible for myself and work hard and earn and grow my business and so to maintain my financial security and my independence. And the political stuff, it's a racket, and I just don't have to take the time for it. I can
here's the fallacy in your argument, because it's the political stuff that's going to exactly take that away from you. And it happened to me. I got active
in politics hasn't taken it,
with a
it
bunch
hasn't,
of people
it hasn't,
wiped
it hasn't
me
hasn't
out.
Taken
so I go
so
ahead
far.
And I work every day, and on my spare time I come out and get active.
Pretty much. Hey, 216, your mic is on, sweetie.
Hey, oh, thanks, Tracy. Yeah, I've been listening on and off, so I want to go back a little. It might pertain to what you're talking about. Earlier, someone said they would rather feed people than bomb people.
I said
and,
that.
Yeah, it was you. And personally, I agree. But, however, it's not the federal government's job to feed people. But it is their job to bomb people. And with that being said, and this is true. And if you look, and
oh,
I want
to
explain
hold on,
government.
I'm having a heart attack.
Let me
all
explain.
Right, go ahead.
Let me explain my interpretation of what our government is supposed to be. It's like imagine a triangle, and the base of the triangle is where the biggest government is, and that's supposed to be your local. And then you move up to state, and at the very top is the federal. They're not supposed to have much power, and one of their powers is defense. But that's about all they're supposed to do.
That's true.
All supposed to be done at the local level. This got turned upside down somewhere in the past 200 years. We got turned upside down, and that's where all these problems are coming from. Because the federal government is top heavy.
I love that. That's great.
We're supposed to be making our own decisions for our own selves at the local level. Most of your 90% of every decision is supposed to be coming at the local level. It got turned around, and that is the whole problem with our government today, in my opinion.
And Americans have allowed things to happen because of lack of information. And we look at something. This is what gets to me. We look at things in black and white, and we don't see gray when they blend the lines. You know, Mark and I were during the break. We were talking about Robin Thicke's new song called "Blurred Lines." You got to understand the Constitution and the federal government and how things run. It and the Republican and the Democrats and the Green Party and all this, how this all this circle works and this infrastructure of the system works. It's all in black and white when you learn it academically. But when you get into the trenches of it, you find out it's all gray. So that what you thought, that all I have to do is twice a year I go and vote, And if I participate in the vote, I have done my duty as an American citizen. And what I'm saying to you is we can point our finger at lobbyists, we can point our finger at corporations, but what I'm saying is you have the opportunity to do and impart and impact laws as you choose if you learn
you
how
know
the
something.
Laws work.
You know, I think you're very naive. I think you're very naive. Now, and I respect what you're saying, but if you feel, you know, mm-hmm. that you and how many other listeners you have, if everyone banded together behind an idea, if you mm-hmm. really thought that you had the influence, the wherewithal, and the strength of a multinational corporation, you're really naive and you're fooling yourself.
Listen,
you really
you have
are.
The,
you really
you
are.
Have, no,
now,
sweetheart,
now on a small,
you are. Listen,
on,
this is what's
on
wrong.
A local
this
grassroots
is what's wrong with
level,
no, no,
the
no. This is listen. This is what's wrong with America today. You
no,
don't
you know
think
that
you, that, no.
Don't
listen,
be naive.
No. I don't. No. You can't tell people what they can and cannot do. That's what's
well,
wrong.
Well, I can tell
you
that you're being naive.
Hold on. We sit down and we want right now. We're getting ready to march. We're getting ready to march on Washington because of 50 years of one black person who wanted to go and do something about civil rights. So you had these group of people, and it was a small group. Now, after the group got started, yeah, a whole bunch of folks said they marched down the street. A whole bunch of folks said they was with Martin Luther King and the rest of them people. But guess what? We know, those of us that do know, that we know that that was a lie. It's the same thing with prayer in schools. One person took prayer out of schools. We need to understand that you have the opportunity. Ooh. You have the opportunity to make a difference. You just have to know where the rules and how the game is played so that you can do so. The problem is they have undereducated us and demotivated us to where we think that we can't make a difference, and we can.
We can make a difference. But how? We can.
You know something? You want to know something? I stand on what I said. You gave a very nice speech. I commend you. You're being very naive if you think through your organizing ability that you have the strength. Or that you have the power, or that you'll have the effectiveness of professionals with millions and millions and millions of dollars at their disposal, and a serious agenda driven behind them. That's my opinion, and it's honorable. I guess you don't feel frustrated in feeling that you can take a small group and that you can organize and the will of the people. Perhaps I'm just gotten
that's
older
what's wrong
and
with America.
I'm cynical.
You are the problem. You are the problem with America because
I'm the problem of America for seeing things the way they are.
Yes, you are the problem with America because you are a part of the Americans who do not understand the Constitution. Absolutely.
Oh my God! What can I do?
Absolutely, because you have been drinking the Kool-Aid where they tell you you have no power to change it.
No, that's not the Kool-Aid that they. That's really not the Kool-Aid that they're promoting. The Kool-Aid that they're promoting or that they're serving is that your vote is really that important, and that is a democracy, and that you really have some say-so. That's the Kool-Aid that's getting pumped.
No, sweetheart.
That's the Kool-Aid that's getting pumped. That
I'm
going to
tell
democracy.
You,
the
rule of politics is, number one, all politics is local. Yes, you can make a difference. You can make a difference in your neighborhood. You can make a difference in your church. You can make a difference in your community. And that's where it starts. And if the politicians know what it is you're doing, when the big boys come in and look at them, they're not going to piss off their constituents. And that's just how it works. They want us to think it, but it's not it. So my little group of people over here that wants to do this project that I'm working on over here, we got the president of the Ohio Senate, the speaker of the Ohio House, coming here to the Mahoning Valley because of us.
Hey, Tracy?
Yeah.
John Boehner chain smokes, by the way.
Before the end of the show, I just want to say I've been listening to this show for 2 years, and I haven't heard anybody like Mr. Brown call in who's at least given a good, intelligent argument to everything that's been put out there, and I want to thank him for calling in.
Thank you so much.
That is
under attack.
That's great.
Thank you so much.
I love him. He's great.
That's true.
Thank
you. Because usually they just tell me just because you said
me somewhere on Blog Talk. Unbelievable.
I like you, Mr. Brown. You at least
thank
leave
you.
Something behind you, sir. And I don't agree with you on much, but we have agreed on stuff. But the stuff we haven't agreed on, I think Tracy and Mark And even Alabama will say the same thing. At least we can have the conversation, and that's
you know, at least we can have the conversation. You know, I like to say that if a mind is like a parachute, if it's not open, it's not going to work. And I am getting older. I am a man of a certain age, and I'm becoming more conservative. It's unbelievable the stuff that I'll agree with, you know, and there's some truth to it. But I still believe
Mr.
what
Brown,
I believe.
I'm going to tell you, you keep on coming back, and I promise you I'll have you out there changing the world. I promise that.
You know,
I've been here 7 years.
If I could do it here from my desk.
You can.
Over the phone,
you
I'm
can.
All for it. If I'm
you
not getting up
you
and marching anywhere.
Your,
you
all,
know, my
all
grandfather
you need is a computer,
used to say.
All you need is a computer, a phone, and a willing mind.
My grandfather used to say, well, I am a salesman. My grandfather used to say you could protest your ass down to Skid Row. I'm going to work. You know, it resonated with me. You can go ahead and complain and march and jump up and down forever. So I got to go to work.
Hey, guys, you know what? I'm at the end of the day. I hope you had a good day. I hope you enjoyed the show.
When does your show, what time does it come on?
We're on every day from noon until 3.
Eastern time.
Monday
so
through Friday.
9 o'clock.
It'll be 9 o'clock until 12.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. I'll try
you
to
have
guys,
coffee and pancakes and bacon
that's
and eggs
right.
while listening to
We're
us.
Here. So thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you.
No,
you say?
Go ahead. No,
thanks.
No, thanks for actually you guys for welcoming me and listening to me.
You're welcome. We'll see you guys on tomorrow. God bless.